frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
in a butt and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. doing here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. I'm waiting for this button to kick over because it's going to blast me here. Alrighty then, stop it. Thank you. Alright, well, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. Special thanks out to all the networks that carry the Mad Science show. It's well appreciated. And so with that said, I got to post a message over here. Been joined by Thomas, doggone it, Raymond, and Larry. Hi, guys. How's it going? Anybody there? They must all have their mics muted. Everybody wants to send me a message. on Skype at just about the time I get ready to start talking. Hi, guys.
Morning. I bet.
Alrighty then. So anyway, you're listening to Mad Science at ShazizRadio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you have access to not one, but three separate chat rooms. It's pretty cool. Anyway, I posted some links in the chat room, some interesting videos. If you want to watch these videos, go check them out. First one I want to start off with talking about has pretty much nothing to do with energy or anything. Well, maybe it does, maybe it don't. I don't know. Either way, it's science related if you're thinking about physics, and it's kind of crazy too. There's a sport out there that they call parkour, and some of the things that these individuals do when they're like jumping off of buildings and doing, in my mind, it's crazy. I actually put a comment on this particular video. I said, yikes, Murphy's Law is an adage or epigram that is typically stated as anything that can go wrong will go wrong. And that is why I would never try that. I would say be safe, but what's the fun in that, I guess? What I would really say is don't do it. Life for me is like wrestling a cactus, and that is enough pain for me, so I'm not going to press my luck and try that. Anyway, it was a young man did they call it a gainer or something like that, did a flip off of the top of a rooftop across sort of like a ravine or something like that into the yard down below, about maybe I'd say at least one story in the air, which was pretty nuts. But, you know, it's just kind of a little example of what could literally be accomplished. You know, people, you know, who aren't fearful of their safety, I guess. Maybe just slightly crazy or, have some sort of death wish, might try something like that. Because myself, I'd be like laying there in the ground and shattered into a million pieces and complaining about how bad it hurt. So I'm not going to try that. But anyway, there's some mad science in there. The second video that I posted down there was a man that basically takes different types of materials and he makes pistons for a little Briggs & Stratton engine and runs them to see how long they'll run and stuff like that. He's tried plastics, he's tried wood, and this last one that's in this particular video, he used a piston made out of JB Weld. And that kind of research, I think, is really crucial to the alternative energy community, because you get to see and test different types of materials and how they will react with basically the standard internal combustion engine. They've also... this particular video user out there on YouTube also has a plexiglass head that you can actually see the combustion happening inside the chamber. And so, you know, it's something you can learn from. Learn how to re-engineer that engine to be 100% efficient. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, the next video in line that I posted down there is basically a home vendor or a backyard inventor, if you want to say, that pretty much made a bicycle that has a steam engine attached to it. And it's pretty nifty how he engineered this design. And it's worthy of going over there taking a look at. But the whole key point about all this was that... Excuse me, I had to take a drink of my coffee. Creativity and the genius that's out there, the people that are available if you want to design things or, you know, get together and work on projects, such as you heard many a times here on Mad Science Show, that there's some brilliant talent out there all over this world. I mean, the things that we could literally accomplish if we wanted to as a people would be wonderful, be amazing. So that brings me to the point of today's show, technology. You know, the technology that's out there in the mainstream market that technology, in my belief, is going to start moving really rapidly. You're going to see basically scenes out of science fiction turned into science fact. And so, with that said, we're standing at a crossroads right now. It's like we the people, you know, are we going to set back a while technology comes rushing in so fast that it's going to become literally overwhelming, the amount of technology that I believe we're going to literally see within the next 2 years. If you Google up the phrase amazing new technology of 2017 and just look and see what people out there are working on, it's going to blow you away. Different things such as flexible screens that they making like TV wristbands that you can have your cell phone. One of them has actually got like a tattoo that uses the tattoo like a touch screen. And, you know, that's something that you'd see in maybe Star Wars or Star Trek or, you know, some of the coolest science fiction shows out there. So science fiction becoming science fact. And we can't forget about the shows that always talk about, you know, artificial intelligence finally getting to the point where it gets so incredible that it actually starts to take over the world. And finally deems that humans aren't necessary anymore and starts to exclude them from the whole picture, so to speak. So, with all that craziness said, anybody got any thoughts on that matter?
Right? I do.
Yeah?
Your Star Wars deal? I mean, think about this a minute. If you can think it, it is possible.
Well, that's what I believe.
Really, I mean, these guys that sit around dreaming up weird scientific possibilities of the future and making movies, and then you got these geniuses, actually, that can play with lights and mirrors and cameras and this, that, and other and make it look like it's real. You know, and then all of a sudden you got this kid sitting in his garage with all these electronic toys, and he said, well, wait a minute, that's possible. I mean, you know, you're sitting there watching a futuristic movie that is not real. Some writer, some genius kid comes up with the idea, well, duh, we can do that. Yeah, okay, it's possible. I mean, you know, think about that a minute.
Well, it's like I say, it's going to start happening so incredibly rapid. You know, there's going to come a point when people are going to believe exactly what you just said, and I believe it. I mean, I already believe it. I've believed it for a long time. I just kind of thought we'd get there a lot faster than what we have. And so,
I think they're showing us the technology that they already have.
Well, I don't.
They just don't release it to the public.
That wouldn't surprise me in the least. You know, it's kind of like the iPhone. You know, you get an iPhone 5 or iPhone 6 or whatever the numbers are now. They sell the first one that has the camera, don't have the camera in it, and then wait until a bunch of those are sold off and then offer you the second one. So those things are...
It's all about money.
Yeah.
I mean, technology's there. They just got to figure out how to make money with it. That's all.
And the problem with that is we have the technology to make things that will last.
Sure, yeah. We do. You know, Thomas is always talking about all different types of materials, you know. There's ways that you can make plastic strong as all get out, you know. Just a little example is back whenever I was working for a plastics company, they had this plastic that they called 70G33 glass-filled nylon. They made pulleys out of that stuff for lawn and garden and stuff and for Ford Motor Company. And those pulleys were like, tough, man. You could almost not break them. That's because of that glass-filled nylon in there. Those things would withstand a lot of temperature, and they would, you know, withstand a lot of, you know, abuse.
What about self-healing plastic? Like, for example, you could make a car body out of self-healing plastic.
Sure.
Run into a concrete wall at 35 miles an hour. I mean, beat the daylights out of it. And then 15 minutes later, it's back. No, not even scratching the paint.
Yeah, well.
You know, the problem you got here is economics, all right? That is the problem. the problem. For example, if you make something that will last forever, self-healing, self-fixing, self-correcting, then you can only sell one to each individual.
Yeah, but see, on that note, let me ask you something. On that note, they're always talking about how, you know, the environment is in such a state of repair, disrepair, and in danger that we need to become self-sustained. Well, I would think that what you just said would have been the most important part of becoming self-sustained, because you wouldn't be wasting all the resources remaking things that were made intentionally, you know, using planned obsolescence to literally fail at some point so they could sell you new ones, you know, aka the light bulb.
And if you can only sell it to one person, to one to each person in the world, that's 7 billion customers.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
You want more?
If it lasts forever, then what you buy today, when you die, goes to one of your grandkids.
Yeah.
Come on.
But they
make
just
magnetic drive generators that'll last for 300 years.
Right.
Yeah, and the technologies that, you know, aren't up to standard yet that need to be up to standard, there will be things that you can make the best you can that will break. And so there will always be some form of, you know, maintenance or repair in order to get these things to work right. Until you get down to, like, say, the perfect frictionless bearing, which I believe we already have, then you're going to have a failure somewhere if some system doesn't react like it's supposed to. So with that said, the work that Thomas does with the different types of materials and stuff like that, that's a really important part of the equation, because all this, the strength of something, or the thermal breakdown of the material, the qualities. I mean, Thomas is brilliant when it comes to this stuff, because he's researched a lot of different types of materials. He knows how they act with you know, different types of other materials and such. And so these types of research, including what I mentioned about the video where the man made the piston out of epoxy resin, you know, he basically made a mold and formed a piston, sanded it down, smoothed it all up, put it inside there, and actually ran an internal combustion engine with it, just so that he could see what the damage would be to that particular material. And in my view, that is the type of research that the average Joe needs to be doing more of, you know, because all the folks out there that are in the mainstream industry, they can hire the best of the best out there to build their technology. They can go out and find the people that are brilliant, you know, and they can offer them a job out of a college or wherever they find them. And so the technology is in the basically the person's hand that has the money. Now,
right,
we got access to a lot of knowledge that could pull the resources to literally build a secondary system, if you understand what I'm trying to get to here, that you're either going to have the technology in the hands of the corporations that where they have full control over it, which essentially that is where it's all heading, you know, right now. Who controls the technology? Who controls the people? Is the technology controlling you, or are you controlling it? This is the choice we got to make. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
Thomas is over there pointing something out, but I don't see nothing on the paper. Hey, so which direction is it going to go? Oh.
Right out of the bus.
Yeah. So, you know, anyway, I'm not like in fear of technology, because I'm amazed with technology. I want to see how far that we can go. I want to be one of those cautious people as we move into the future, if you understand what I'm saying. Because if you think about the whole concept of artificial intelligence, you know, how far artificial intelligence has gone and where it will go and how fast the computers finally advance or evolve, however you want to say it, that could get pretty scary. There's a lot of scenarios where that could not go so well. You see what I mean?
think artificial intelligence is a bad idea. If you'll think about it, what is man other than an infestation, a parasite, something that should be gotten rid of?
What? Are you crazy?
No, he's not.
We're destroying the earth.
If you think about what Larry is saying, he's right.
What
this infestation needs to do is use its real intelligence, not artificial, and fix itself.
I've already had this dispute before about mankind.
Listen, listen, man, listen carefully. What he's saying is that you put artificial intelligence together with machine technology that doesn't cause waste and destruction and is actually sentient and aware of what's going on around it, that's exactly what it's going to see the human race as, and it's going to start thinking maybe it's better to get rid of it.
Well, I agreed at that point that it would eventually think that we were obsolete, but from my own personal perspective...
Your perspective doesn't matter to a machine, though.
I get that.
If it's got the guns, and you don't want it having the guns and having that viewpoint, and we are wasted, we are destructive, as a species, we have done so much damage, it's not even funny, so the last thing we need is something that can judge us.
Right.
Well, wipe us out.
So that's why I keep saying that we have the technology right now to make a choice. Are we going to put this in Big Daddy Computer's hands, or are we going to put it in our hands and do what we've had the potential to do all along and advance and as a species, as you'd call us, then move humanity towards a different direction to where we work in perfect harmony with nature? I know it can be done.
Yes. You know,
I mean, you got kids that can jump off of top of buildings, do a flip in the air, land down there on their feet, and run around and do it again, and that shows just a little tiny fraction of what the human is actually capable of if they want to put their mind to it, you know? If we could get past all the craziness and the fear, and we could get to a proper understanding of how nature functions and work in perfect harmony with nature. When I talk about free energy on this radio show, nature has provided more resources than we could ever use in a trillion, trillion, trillion lifetimes. I don't care how many people's on this planet, we ain't never going to run out of nothing. We're never going to be able to destroy this planet to the extent that this planet is gone. We're only going to be able to destroy this planet to the extent that we can't survive on it. And so, it's either we're going to learn how to work in perfect harmony with nature, or mankind's going to die. That's as plain and simple as that. As soon as mankind's all dead, then nature will start all over again. And everything that was on this planet will get recycled into the system, and if nature chooses to put man back on the planet, well, there you go.
Well, I don't think she would.
Huh?
I don't think she would. Because, let me ask you a question. How many times have you done an experiment and it didn't work, and you did it over again exactly the same way?
Well, I don't know. Some people believe that there were higher societies prior to ours. You know, there were people that got technologically advanced so bad that they nuked their own self out of existence, and then along come the next set of cavemen and went on up the dang deal and finally got so advanced that they wiped themselves out too. And so if that was the case, if we had been so advanced prior, and the doggone, we're making, repeating the same mistake before. You know, they say the example of being insane is repeating the same thing over and over basically expecting a different result. Well, maybe nature's insane.
And what he said was to do an experiment exactly the same way every time, over and over again, and each time, expecting a different outcome, that is the symbol of crazy.
Well, either way, I don't look at humanity as a parasite. I look at the potential of humanity, what we could be, as opposed to what we are. We've made a lot of mistakes in our time, But the technologies that we have access right now and the technologies that's coming up, if properly utilized, could literally bring about a heaven on earth, a utopia, so to speak. Now, when I say that, hold on a second. When I say that, people look at me like I'm crazy. But the truth of the matter is, if you took a step back and you looked at the big picture and everything that we have access to, old technologies, new technologies, and all the brilliant minds of this world, there is no reason why we couldn't basically blend in so well with nature that we wouldn't be causing any harm. You understand
what
I'm saying?
You're absolutely right, but fossil fuel people won't let us do that.
You know, the thing is, I think you've got the wrong idea about what Larry said, what I agreed with, that man is nothing more than a parasite on Earth. Now, I think what you did is you took it the wrong way, not the way we meant it. Like, for example, a mushroom, it grows in rotting wood. It is a parasite. It eats dead wood, dead crap. I mean, you know, what's the old saying? They keep me in, they treat me like a mushroom. They keep me in the dark and feed me BS. I mean, a parasite is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, after all, I love mushrooms on my pizza. So, but what Larry's saying is man is a parasite on Earth in that he uses the Earth the wrong way.
Well, and to this point in the game, I would agree that yeah, we're acting like that. But
you got what Larry was talking about, and I agree with him 100%. Man is a parasite, but maybe not a bad one. Maybe
I don't believe we're parasites. I maybe we're acting like it at this point in the game. You know, but I guess that's up to whoever's opinion wants to, you know, think. I'm just saying that if we used every bit of resource and knowledge that we have at our fingertips right now, we could make this world perfect. It literally, we have that power.
I agree.
You become a good parasite.
Yes, I agree totally.
No matter how hard you try, you will never get me to agree that man's a parasite. Period.
Well, we use things up rather than live in harmony with nature.
There you go.
Sure, but see, here's the amazing thing about nature. Nature recycles anything that man don't use. There is no chemical that is here now that wasn't here before, and even after we use it, there's no chemical that will be left after we're gone. Everything that is in nature, that came from nature, every single material, including water, and nature has its own self-contained biosphere that will clean itself up regardless of what we do. There is nothing we could do. Even if we nuked this entire planet and wiped all of mankind out, nature will clean it back up. Now, the question you have to ask yourself is, do you have enough time to wait for nature to do the job by itself, or are you willing to jump in there and help fix it to speed the process up? So, you know, we're never going to run out of fossil fuel. The fossil fuel, I feel, is a misnomer anyway, because everything in this world is a carbon-based entity, and so everything has carbon in it, no matter what. And as long as nature continues to do what nature does, then you're never going to run out of oil. Crude oil is never going to go. You take a look at some of the doggone fields over there in Texas that were shut down back in the 70s or whatever, and because they ran dry on oil, and you go back there, those things are already filled back up.
Yep. Yes, they have. And people don't understand.
Yeah, you on your parasite discussion, maybe, you know, I'm agree that it's not a parasite. I'd have to quote Smith, where I'd like to share a revelation I had during my time here. It came to me when I tried to classify your species, and I realized that you're not actually mammals. Every mammal on this planet instinctively develops a natural equilibrium with its surrounding environment. But you humans do not. You move on to an area and you multiply and multiply until every natural resource is consumed. And the only way you can survive is to spread to another area. There is another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Do you know what it is?
What?
A virus.
Oh.
All right, well...
Listen, this is the idea of how would a machine see the human race?
Yeah, I agree.
And this is their supposition, that human beings are a disease, a cancer on the planet. You're a plague, and we are the cure. So do you really want machines that can actually think?
See, I don't want artificial intelligence looking at me like, what the heck was that? I don't want artificial intelligence looking at me like I'm a virus or a plague or a disease, and then having access to the power to exterminate me, so to speak. Look.
You know, a machine that could actually think would not reproduce unless it had a need for it. If a need such as one of the machines actually failed to the point it could not be repaired, so they would just simply disassemble it and make another machine. Once they reach their maximum number necessary for their survival, then they would actually control themselves. And therefore, man would be a blight on the earth. So the machines would take over.
Well, how many of you guys here in this this chat right here, how many of you guys consider yourself as a blight on the world?
I do.
Do you think you're a blight on the world?
Yes, sir.
I'm talking to Larry for a second. Larry, you think there's any way possible that you can be less of a blight on the earth and work in harmony with nature?
Absolutely.
All right, so there's a resolution. What about you, Raymond?
Absolutely.
All right, so there's a second resolution. Thomas, do you think you can be less of a blight on the earth?
I'm already doing it.
All right, so we're all in agreement here. This is what I'm talking about. You know, people look at each other as a blight on the earth, but the people have the power to literally not throw trash on the ground, to literally not waste resources, to literally go out there, look and study and learn how nature works and function side by side like a well-oiled machine with nature. That's my point. That's why I say we got a choice whether we want to be a virus or a blight or a parasite on the earth. We have a choice, literally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Problem is people making a bad choice. When you've got 7 billion of them, there are going to be more than enough that are going to be making a bad choice to cause enough of the others to say, what's the point? And then they make a bad choice, and it creates that ripple effect you keep talking about, but in a negative manner.
So we got to get the people out there of like mind, such as ourselves, to try to educate these individuals or show them how to do it the right way.
And we are all willingly trying to kill ourselves by using the technology of today. All of our electronics are bad for us. Your cell phone, when you put your cell phone up to your head, it heats your brain just like a microwave.
Hey, Larry, it's not just today, too. This is a common factor with humanity because they've been doing things like overconsumption of alcohol, smoking cigarettes. They've been constantly running out into danger when they don't need to.
Are you
because they get bored.
Are you picking on me?
All right, well, you guys...
We have been doing that since long before we had cell phones. We've been doing it long since before we even had guns and bombs to kill ourselves off with. And any technology that comes along that can be developed, it will be developed, regardless of how dangerous it is.
Right.
Well, and that's what I'm pointing out, that the crossroads that we stand on. Are we, you know, there's a comment in there. Marcus says in the Shaziz chat room, says, laugh out loud, glad to hear David Rockefeller on Mad Science. Is David present? Anyway, and Steven says, I agree, Marcus, brainwashing runs deep here. You know, this whole world out here, man, I'm telling you, the people that have been in charge, the people that have been steering the boat, they got their ways of basically getting you to agree and believe certain things. I'm sitting here saying, I'm looking at the big picture, folks. I'm sitting here looking at all the technology. My mind works mechanically. I see how things could be as opposed to how they are. I mean, why run an internal combustion engine if it's only 36% efficient and then turn around and complain about how we need to be sustainable? We need to find clean, renewable, alternative energies and be sustainable. Okay, well, if you can't even figure out how to make your existing technology 100% efficient, then how are you ever going to get to that point? You know, and if you keep on trying to discourage people from searching up alternative energy uses while you're complaining we need to find alternative uses, how are you ever going to get sustainable? And if we are raping the planet and becoming a parasite or a virus and you're worried about the humanity's existence, then why aren't we doing something to fix it? We have every single answer to every single question under the sun and all the technology to make it so, and yet here we are arguing over whether or not we can do it or not. There's a lot of, yeah. And last I heard there were 9 billion people on the planet. All right, that's a whole lot of people. There's technology to feed them all. There's technology to shelter them and house them. You know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility for us to literally, you know, wake up and learn our lesson and move forward and see how far humanity could go. That's what I'm trying to say, folks.
You know, one problem with the modern-day technology, as far as electronics and cell phones and text messaging and so forth, one of the problems is the people that are developing these technologies, what they're doing is exactly as you go out and you find six, seven, and eight-year-old kids playing cowboys and Indians, and then you give them real guns. Think about that a minute.
Well, I wouldn't want to do that.
That in the United States, I don't know about other countries, but in the United States, minor accidents and automobile accidents has increased over 30 to 35% in the past 5 or 6 years because of text messaging. Do you realize that there are over 3,000 people that have to go to the hospital because they had an accident because they were texting and walking? That
See,
is 300 people a day.
Sure. And so those folks out there who believe in depopulation, all they got to do is let stupidity run its course, and that's that. We could build cars that wouldn't crash. We could build cars that would compensate for people that were talking on the cell phone. We could build autonomous cars with artificial intelligence that would take that car down the road. But the whole concept of a car, one of these days you get in your car and you say, "Good morning, George, how are you doing today?" And your car says, "Well, I'm not in too good of a mood. I'm taking you for a ride." It's not going to be joyful.
I'll show you how to heal myself.
Yeah.
But he did.
And we can make all of our cars self-sustaining electric.
Sure we could. You're
going to take the car and deliberately run it into a wall 10 miles an hour. Oh, I survived. So now, what is it? Try 15. Bam. Oh, man, that hurt. Oh, God. I wonder if I can take 20. They're going to deliberately do this stuff.
Well,
so,
there you go, man.
Population, take care of yourself because you're going to get rid of the stupid people.
Yep. Well, then here's the next question. With computer technology, how long is it before people start getting angry at each other and hacking each other's car and turning the brakes off or whatever, you know?
Right,
exactly. So, look, I'm not afraid of technology. Right now, I'm just afraid of the people in charge of technology, the people that suppress good technology. Maybe they suppress it because they think they're saving the world or whatever. There are certain technologies that probably should have never made the marketplace or even out there into the public, but nonetheless, they're still there. It's about individual responsibility in this world. I mean, we're here to enjoy and learn and live life and experience all this kind of stuff, but in the process, if we just go running amok and doing whatever the heck it is we please, you know, and just trample all over nature, well, it's like the fishbowl scenario that I told you about, you know. If there ain't some force you know, putting fresh water in there every now and then, you know, we would literally destroy our own fish bowl and we'll die. Period.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
I'm not afraid for the planet's safety. The planet's going to do fine. For all those environmentalists out there talking about save the planet, you're trying to save the wrong thing. You should be trying to save the people. Because Mother Nature, when nature gets upset, you're going to know it. I guarantee you. And if you get overpopulated, nature will put a virus down there to take some of you out because you just, you're just too many people for the oxygen provided. Somebody got to go. It ain't man's choice what happens to nature. It's nature's choice what happens to man. And you need to get that straight. Because it ain't nature, it ain't the planet you need to save. It's mankind. And if we don't learn to work wisely with nature or ourselves, we're going to go bye-bye. Nature will shake us off like a bad set of fleas. There's your parasite.
I like that scenario.
So, there you go, man. And I'm saying we got the technology right now. I'm sitting there, step back, look at the big picture. I recognize all the potential of what we could do right now. Alternative energy, free energy, it's there. It's there for the taking. Anybody who wants to try to make it happen, we got people that are gathering together. You guys pull your resources together. One of us can't maybe afford it by ourselves, but all of us could afford it if we pitched in together. You know?
Yep.
And if it was a mutual deal, heck, I'd be on that bandwagon. If anybody got a design or invention they want to work on and we're going to try it before we deny it, we'll just jump in there. We'll do our best and find out, troubleshoot it, and make it happen. But if you got dreams or aspirations to become the wealthy, famous, and part of the big, giant system where you're like got more money than you ever be able to spend in your lifetime, you're only fooling yourself, because the people out there who are already in power, who already have the money, they have the team to ensure that you never make it past the fence. If we're down here in the fence anyway, and we have all these resources available to us, we have access to this technology, and we're not utilizing it properly or wisely, then we deserve whatever artificial intelligence comes down the pipe and decides that we're not worthy anymore and takes us out. That's just the way it is. I mean, what can you say? You teach your children all the time while they're growing up, don't do this because you'll get hurt. Don't do that because you get in trouble. You know, be safe, be wise. And you teach them that, and if they go outside the doggone gate and they don't do what you warned them ahead of time and they hurt themselves, who's to blame, you or them?
Right.
So, I'm saying, for mad science purposes, if you guys and gals out there in this world seriously want to fix this world, if you seriously want to work in a perfect harmony with nature, you need to get behind Larry Woods and Raymond and Thomas and myself and everybody else and back us all the way and protect us against the corporations and the governments of the world who want to take any ideas that we come up with and run off and hide them somewhere in a cave where nobody can see it and not know what it is. You know, if I built something today and I put it out there tomorrow that say, that shows once and for all that energy is free and it's self-contained and self-running, you think the governments of the world or the corporations of the world ain't going to want to shut that down? If you're
dead by tomorrow night.
Yeah.
They couldn't, not if you gave it away.
That's what I'm talking about. If I gave it to everybody and everybody and his brother knows about it, they know it works, then there's no way that they can hide it anymore. But if only a few people know it and I throw it out there, you think they couldn't have the technology to literally delete every word I've ever said on the internet or every picture I've ever posted? You know, until the people start realizing where their true power is in each other and the technologies that they have access to right now and utilizing that technology brother to brother, sister to sister, or so on down the line, sharing that information freely and just for the sole purpose of working in harmony with nature and working in harmony with one another and literally advancing the human race to the right direction as opposed to the direction that we're heading right now.
And most people think that you've got to do everything all at once.
You don't.
You can start by powering one light bulb.
Right.
You can do it one step at a time. Do right. a little bit. Do your part. Turn those lights off when you leave a room. That's a good start.
Yeah.
The power company charges you for 15 minutes out of a 30-day period, and that's the 15 minutes of your highest usage, because they've got to have that available for you. And any time you use more than that, your monthly usage goes up, and you're charged a premium for that extra power. And the next month, your bill will be higher, because they've rated you that they've got to have that much power for you.
Right.
So turn that stuff off.
That's the thing.
The first step.
You know, if you cut your doggone utility bills by using, you know, existing technologies such as solar or wind, and that money is starting to come back to you as opposed to going out to them, you can use that to invest in your networks that you build together. You know, I could use my savings to help me, Thomas, and Raymond and Larry build technologies that we're trying to share with you. That's where the funding comes from, the savings that we would have otherwise spent out to give to somebody else. That's just wisdom, man.
With a couple of minor adjustments on my almost 2,000 square foot house, my electric bill is never over $46 a month.
Wow!
And that's with an air conditioner.
Wow.
Well, see, that's the kind of bills that everybody needs. You know, if you're going to be paying the power company, you might as well be paying the least amount possible by being the most efficient.
Larry just called me a whale. I'm going to cry. He called me a whale.
Anyway,
$100 a big old month every month, winter and summer.
The internal combustion engine, they say, is only 36% efficient. That's because it has so many losses in it because of the lack of engineering that goes into it. And don't get me wrong, when I say lack of engineering, I'm not talking they're not engineered good. I mean, they're good. They're just not great. They're not efficient. They waste more than they use.
They're 60% efficient at best.
Yeah, so even that, that's a lot
so
of fuel.
They're charging you 40% more than you need to pay for using it.
That's a lot of fuel being wasted. All right? And that means the more fuel you're wasting, the more it's going to cost you. So imagine if you re-engineered or just did a few modifications to your vehicle to get the best fuel mileage possible, the best bang for your buck, so to speak, then you would save some money. And that money you could reinvest in your communities to do things better.
Okay, you know? Here's a good tip for that. A ring magnet. When you put more than one magnet together, they get stronger. Okay? So find a ring magnet that will fit over your fuel line and stack a whole bunch of them on there. That will polarize your fuel and it will burn more efficiently.
Well,
that's a trick that they've known since the 50s.
Basically, what some people would like to say an urban myth about carburetors out there that'll get over a couple hundred miles to the gallon. I don't believe it's an urban myth because I understand that vaporized fuel will burn better than a stream of fuel. And it's basic science, it's basic physics, and so to me it is more than plausible that you could literally re-engineer the fuel injection system in any engine, whether it be diesel or gas, and not excluding a specifically designed to run off of water engine. All of these could be
LP gas.
All of these could be done.
So this, what you're talking about right now, all anybody has to do to say that you're right or wrong, all they have to do is the math. Just do the math. There are so many BTUs in a gallon of gasoline. That's it. No more, no less.
Right.
Okay? Now, it takes so many BTUs to propel an automobile 1 mile. You do the math. The BTUs in a gallon of gasoline, there is enough energy in 1 gallon of gasoline to propel the modern automobile 360 miles at 55 miles an hour on 1 gallon of gasoline.
See?
Do the math.
Just think about the BTUs being wasted through the engine block, through the side of the transmission, through the exhaust system, through the frictions of the brakes, all the heat losses that are coming off of a vehicle while you're driving them. And heat is one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, element we got. I mean,
you know, I've said this before in the same program. The American Railroad Association got together, pooled their money, and they took out an ad in an engineering magazine 15 years ago, and they were bragging that they could move 40 tons of product, not the train, but product. They could move 40 tons of product 40 miles on 1 gallon of diesel fuel. Now, 3 years ago, they took out another ad in the same magazine, an engineering magazine, bragging how they had increased that. They could now move 60 tons of product 40 miles on 1 gallon of diesel fuel.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't understand.
We're building automobiles, they get 16, 18 miles to the gallon, 22 miles to the gallon.
A lot of people don't understand that those train engines that are out there, those are hybrid. They got diesel generators that are running electric motors in those trains.
Yes. And no transmission, no rear end, no differential. I mean, they've cut out all the friction. They got steel wheels on steel tracks.
I've even installed diesel railroad engines as power backup systems in buildings.
Right. I mean, think about that. You take a pickup truck and you put an electric motor, a DC motor, on each wheel on that truck. Then you've done away with transmission, you've done away with differential, you've done away with this, you've done away with that. Now all of a sudden you have a 5-horsepower Brinkman Stratton motor in the back of your pickup truck turning a generator. Now when you go to brake that car, that truck, and you push your brakes, you don't have brakes. Your motor reverses, it turns into a generator. So the energy you need to stop the vehicle, it's making energy, putting it back into your battery. Your generator would very, very seldom ever, especially in city driving, would very seldom ever run above an idle.
Let me take you one step further with that.
Okay.
On each of your axles and each of your electric motors, on their shafts, place magnets and put a toroidal coil inside or around those magnets. Put that into two capacitor systems. One capacitor system to begin moving the vehicle and another larger capacitor system so that when you get to your destination, you can plug into the building and power the building from your vehicle.
Yes, absolutely.
Recharge your house capacitor system when you get home from your car.
You know, there are certain plastics that actually when the wind blows across them, they make static electricity. What if you made your body out of a combination of self-healing plastic and static generating plastic? Now, as you run down the highway, your car is actually making energy. The more wind you have passing across the plastic, the more energy it's making. It won't make enough to run the car, but it will help.
Well, if you put air intakes on the car like they used to have on the floorboards and put vertical wind turbines in there, you can generate more power as you're moving.
Well, not only that, the thermal possible capabilities of all this, you know, when the engine's running, it's producing a massive amount of heat. That heat is energy. Energy can be stored. It can be transferred. It can be changed to different forms of energy. So you can use the heat to produce energy. And
thermal electricity is one of the easiest things to do.
Yeah. And once you learn the limitations of thermoelectrics, all you have to know about thermoelectrics is that when both sides of those different types of metals become the same temperature, the process stops. And so all you have to do is ensure that one side stays at a different temperature than the other, and it will continuously produce electron flow. So
I paint white paint.
Yeah, that's so ridiculously simple to do. That's why Peltier elements work as well as they do. You know, one side's cold, the other side's hot, you get energy transfer. It's that simple, you know. And all the laws of physics, you don't even have to defy any of the known laws of physics if you don't want to, you know, including Lenz's law. We've already talked about this ad nauseum on this radio show.
Wait. I got to laugh at that one. If you don't want to, if you try to defy the laws of physics, you will fail. Because everything we're talking about obeys the laws of physics. If it was not for the laws of physics, what we're talking about would not work.
Sure, but I'm saying each one of these laws of physics, you know what causes them, you know how to invoke them, and how to not invoke them.
Right.
You know, Lenz,
one of the problems with modern physics is they leave magnetism out of most equations.
the Lenz effect, we know what causes it. The electron flow right back there in the same generator you're trying to pull power from. You're trying to generate power, and then you turn your light bulb on, which makes a direct path right back to the same exact generator, producing a second magnetic field, and you cause that generator to have to work hard. Now, why not just pull that energy off that generator, send it down the road, change it to something completely different so that it can't go back the other direction? People that think that's not possible weren't paying attention back in the late 1800s with the Mercury Arc rectifier. They were able to guide that energy to the direction they wanted it to go. They took a little pool of mercury, high voltage AC, heated up that mercury into a vapor, turned that vapor into a gas, essentially energized it into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, and sent that energy pressurized inside that chamber and out the other side as in the form of high voltage DC so that they could run Edison's elevator motors. So, it's not like it can't be done. They did it. I imagine that because when they first turned that thing on, mercury being liquid metal would be a dead short, so at the very first instant of that thing being ignited or whatever, that generator would want to drop on its face because it just hit a dead short. But that heat, that dead short just made a massive amount of heat, which vaporized that into a gas, and then the high voltage energy just rushed right back in and energized it into plasma. That plasma.
Most of those systems lasted over 50 years.
Yeah, there's.
We don't have anything that'll last that long now.
There are arc rectifiers still in existence, still functioning to this very day.
You know, the one thing that I was working on a few years back, and I haven't worked on it lately, and that's about coal steam turbine. And the whole point of me working on that was to try to show people that you can't destroy energy. It's there. We're swimming in it. We're drowning in the stuff. It's free. But the coal steam turbine, what it does is the air conditioner takes the heat out of the air in your house or in your building and puts it outside. Now you can take that heat and turn it into electricity.
Yep.
And feed it back into your air conditioning system. Now because nothing is 100% that made by man, that is, you know, you're not going to collect it all, but it will cut your electric bill for your air conditioning system 30 to 40%.
See?
Because that heat can be turned into electricity, and that's what the coal steam turbine does.
Even at that, right there, that's a prime example that if you took what you were wasting in the form of heat and you utilized it, you just made that system more efficient. See, it's efficiency that we should be striving for instead of trying to reach all the way out there and grab self-sustaining or whatever. We should be going for the highest possible efficiency that we can. In the process, we'll finally reach the holy grail of alternative energy. It's just, right now, how many companies out there do you know that are taking every single bit of energy that engine makes and guiding it where they want it to go. You know, measure the temperature on any internal combustion engine. I don't care how new the car is, how fancy of injection system it's got on there. Your average vehicle runs at 160 to 180 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit, and that is a lot of wasted heat. You've got to have a radiator system that'll take some of that heat away to maintain that temperature down to that safe operating temperature so that you're not causing your hoses to reach their thermal breakdown and blow because of the pressure. You're wanting to keep your oil at an operating temperature that is going to not break down that oil. Everything out there has a thermal breakdown. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about electricity or internal combustion engines or what. Everything has a thermal breakdown. Once it reaches that thermal breakdown, the weaker material is going to get softer quicker, and the harder material is going to start digging into whatever it is that it's rubbing up against, no matter if there's oil between it or not. The viscosity of the oil will get thinner, it will get hotter and hotter, and it will continue to get hotter until it finally boils, and whatever the weakest part's going to go first, and then that system's going to fail. But if you design the system to never be able to reach its thermal breakdown of whatever specific material that is the weakest in that engine would never fail. And if you redesign the way that the fuel was sent into the chamber, you would be putting less carbon down in via the blow-by, the rings in the engine. And so that means your oil would stay cleaner much, much longer, making your oil more efficient. And if your oil doesn't break down, if your oil doesn't fail, you could literally build an engine that wouldn't even require a doggone oil filter any longer. You understand right. What I'm saying?
Of that efficiency.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, we have the technology to do just that.
Yes, we do. It's there. It's already there. Take it off the shelf, plug and play.
See, folks, look, I want somebody out there. I got so many projects. I got so many irons in the fire, and it's on my list. I got a long list of projects that I want to do. I want somebody, because an engine is only 36% efficient, then that means that most of that fuel is going out the exhaust. I want somebody to take something like a Briggs & Stratton engine and see if they can run the next engine in line off of the exhaust fumes. You may have to cool that gas down before you send it into that engine, but there's technology available, like wood gasifiers, which have a bubbler system which cleans it up before and cools it down before it actually goes in to be used as fuel. That technology was used back in, I believe, World War One or Two. When they were running low on fuel, they would gasify wood and use that to run their vehicles with. So, the technology's there. I would like to see somebody try to run another engine off of the wasted fuel that's coming out the exhaust of the first engine. What do you think?
Why do that? Just make the engine itself more efficient to where the exhaust cannot burn.
Why do that? To prove a point. That's how much.
Okay. You're right.
That's how much fuel this thing's wasting.
Then you take the first engine and make it more efficient.
Yeah, that's how it's wasting enough fuel to literally run a second engine.
Yes.
And
more than
that. Somebody out there calculate up the math and tell me it can't be done. If a car is running lean, you'll smell the exhaust. You'll smell the gas coming out of it.
That's for sure.
And back in the old days, like in the 50s and 60s, they used to put spark igniters inside the exhaust, and they would wrap it out and get a big old flame would shoot out the back of the doggone tailpipe.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that.
So, if that can be done, then that tells me that fuel is going out the exhaust. And if you want a super clean exhaust, then you need to start realizing that the faster that piston goes up and down, the faster them valves open and close, the least efficient that thing's going to become. You should be actually cutting back on the fuel the harder you run that vehicle, because when those pistons are going up and down, you don't have enough time for a clean burn. But if you was running that thing off of atomized and vaporized fuel to begin with, then you would have more time for that to have a clean burn. You see what I mean?
Yep.
That's only common sense, man. I don't understand why, you know, people out there, I do understand why the mainstream doesn't want to work it that way, because you want to be able to sell more fuel. You want to be able to sell more oil products. You don't want this car to be running cool all the time where it's not going to reach its thermal breakdown and fail. Otherwise, you might put mechanics out of the job or whatever. There's a million and one excuses why we're not doing it.
And people say that new technology is gonna end the job force. Cars didn't put Teamsters out of business. Teamsters turned into truck drivers. We're not gonna put any industry. We're gonna put industry out of business, but we're gonna replace those people in other jobs that are going to be beneficial to mankind rather than use everything up.
You know, the thing is, what you're talking about is absolutely true. And I've said many times, he who does not study history is doomed to repeat it. The thing is, what you were talking about, for every type of new type of engineering or mechanics or whatever that it bettered man's life, that ended a particular type of industry, it created, for every job it ended, it created three other jobs for people. I mean, every time we improve the standard of living, we inevitably end somebody's lifestyle. We end their livelihood. We end their job, because we don't need that anymore, but we need this. So every time we destroy a job for one person, we create three jobs for three other people. And that one person, if they're smart, will pick it up and they'll take one of those three positions. You're right. When automobiles were made, Teamsters lost their jobs. Well, some of them were smart enough to learn how to drive a dang on truck.
Well, there you go, man.
And now the Teamsters Union is still one of the strongest unions in the country.
Yes, they are. They really are. I used to be a union man. I was a sheet metal worker in Local 100 in Norfolk, Virginia.
There's a slight conversation going on in the chat room about capacitors and stuff. And capacitor technology these days has gotten amazing. These supercapacitors that they got, they charge and discharge rate on them are incredible. And there's a lot of reason. I think Stephen Gibbons just actually posted a video in there I was about to mention, that where the guy took his car battery out, which weighs about 20 pounds, and replaced it with a 2-pound boost pack of capacitors, and was able to start this and run his car on it.
So I've seen that video. That's really neat.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive technology. But, you know, A lot of the people that say that, you know, capacitors can do this and they can't do that for different reasons or whatever, it's all about materials. It's all about engineering, how you engineer that capacitor.
Absolutely.
You can take two plates. It doesn't matter what two plates is, and you can use any dielectric in between the center of them. You know, and there's a scale out there that will tell you which materials are the best dielectrics. All right, from what I understand, glass is the best dielectric. So you can take any two plates and you can have those two plates separated from that dielectric in the center, and you can produce a capacitor that will store a static charge, and you can charge this and discharge this capacitor. Well, if you're worried about current flow, then you also got to remember that the timing of how fast this thing's going to discharge, the volume of the surface area, will determine on how long that discharge is going to occur. The fact that you can take a capacitor and you can hook it to a car, and that will start that car up because it's already connected to the car. You don't charge the capacitor and then plug it in. You see what I'm saying?
you know,
you already have it connected to the load.
The only difference between a lead acid battery and a capacitor is they're made different. They're both batteries. They store energy.
They're both capacitors too.
But yes, they're both capacitors. They're both batteries. They're just simply a means of storing energy. It's how you take the energy off of that storage cell.
That's it. It's like,
exactly.
Like a, you can take.
The thing is, a capacitor has been already, like you said, supercapacitors, okay? They have already been revamped, reorganized, re-engineered to where they can store pound for pound far, far more energy than a lead-acid battery. We've got lead-acid batteries that have been using for over 100 years.
They've got flashlights that have nothing more than capacitors in there. They don't require batteries. And basically, you put an LED on a capacitor. It's already connected to the capacitor. You got a resistor on there so that it don't charge that LED. But then you charge that capacitor up, and that capacitor will run like a battery. You can use it for a flashlight. They got ones that you can shake up.
All of my flashlights are magnetic induction.
And a capacitor is a battery.
Yeah.
It stores energy.
All of my flashlights are magnetic induction. You just shake them or turn a crank and you've got power.
Right.
Well, there you go. And another thing is that when you design these capacitors, the thickness of the plate's going to make a difference, just like as in a battery. You know, like a deep cycle battery and a heavy duty battery is going to have heavier plates with more surface area to be able to store more of a charge.
Right.
And so it's all in the way you engineer those capacitors, but we know that technology is available right there, right now.
And if you put a toroidal coil around four magnets on a rotating shaft, that's going to generate four pulses of electricity in that coil every time that shaft turns one full rotation.
Well, Marcus says
that's a lot of energy.
Marcus says in the chat room that's all good, Shaziz, but to keep the car running, you still need the combustion engine.
No, you don't.
It depends on how you engineer it.
Do you need a combustion engine to make your electric fan work?
Well, listen. We pointed out this out before, but here's the thing: to keep that charged up, there are so many different forms of energy, not excluding static electricity, in order to be able to charge that capacitor on demand while you're driving down the road. You could literally build an electric car that had nothing more than capacitors. The body of the car itself could be a capacitor. A capacitor is nothing more than a storage tank. And so if you have a multi-layered body on that car that has tons and tons of surface area, you got two different materials. The tires are rubbing against the road. That produces friction, which builds up a static charge. You got the air blowing across the car. The materials that you use to build the car with could literally turn that car into the actual battery for that power source. And on board?
Huh? I know you're old enough to remember the old-timey cars years ago would build a static electricity just driving down the road. You step out of the car, you touch the body, and get shocked.
Yeah.
So people would hang a piece of conductive material from the bottom of their car to touch the ground. Now, when running down the road, the wind would pick that up, and the car would build a static charge. But when you stop, that piece would just drop down and touch the ground, and it would ground the vehicle.
Yeah.
Even the old cars would build static electricity.
Just a mere act of you riding in the car. If you got cotton pants on and you're sitting on a vinyl seat, you're producing electricity while you're sliding back and forth in that seat.
And people say, there's no such thing as free energy.
Yeah.
You dip.
So Marcus, it's not that we can't do it. It's just that we got to get people on board to actually recognizing that, you know, if you want to utilize the laws of physics in the proper manner, you could engineer things to do amazing things. We could literally build a car that would charge itself up down as it goes down the road. We have the technology to do it.
They've already got that. There's an electric car out now that they make the road for it, but the car literally charges as you drive down the road. They make the rebar that they put in bridges has to be coated in plastic or the bridge railings would kill people.
That's how much
electricity is generated.
Well, think about
my car driving over it.
Think about this for a second. There is an actual equation out there, and you can check it out and look up a group called the Atmospheric Group. They got two or four 200-foot poles up in the air, and they got a wire stretched all the way around it. There is an actual equation out there that will tell you how much static charge will build up per how many feet you come off the ground. The higher you get up there,
50 volts per meter.
Yeah. So you could do that mathematics. If that equation exists out there, then that means there's going to be voltage close to the ground as well. While you're driving through the air, you're producing friction against the atmosphere, whatever atmosphere is out around you. There's electron change going as you're walking through the doggone house. So there's so many different ways in which to collect energy that you're surrounded in. It's ludicrous. You got tires rubbing against the road. You got your booty rubbing against the vinyl seats or, you know, whatever. Any two dissimilar materials rubbing against each other will exchange electrons. So we know that, all right? And even he mentioned in there about a desk fan. You know, the desk fan itself, you could re-engineer that desk fan. Even if you was only pulling off a little bit of charge off of static electricity buildup, but if you had a bank big enough to hold any static charge, it's just like filling a swimming pool, man. Until it meets resistance, it's going to have power in that deal. You see what I mean?
Yep.
And, you know, like a swimming pool, I did that video called 9 Volts, and I sat there and showed you. I even did the video unsubscribed because I just couldn't understand why people couldn't understand what it was I was trying to point out to them. I started off with a system that is like 9 to 10 separate circuits that all require 9 volts apiece to run. I used a set of capacitors starting from large all the way down to small, and you could set there a little hand crank generator and you'd crank this thing up, charge it up, and then drop the hand crank and let it run for a while until that you can watch that energy flow downhill until it gets to the smallest load, and then finally the last light will stop blinking and the piezoelectric will still keep buzzing until it finally runs completely out of energy and all the capacitors find their natural balance. Well,
what's the word for the crystals that you put electricity in and they vibrate?
Piezoelectric?
Piezoelectric, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, my heart doctor, I was talking to him about piezoelectric because I bought about 10,000 of them. And I was talking to him about it that you just take this crystal, all you have to do is flex it the slightest little bit. And it produces electricity.
Yeah.
He said, wait a minute. He reached in his pocket. He pulled out this little teeny tiny plastic container and he opened it up. And he picked out, there were about four or five of these little objects in it. He picked it up, wow, and he showed it to me. He said, here's the piezoelectric. I said, yeah. He said, yeah, we actually insert this in the lungs of people with pacemakers. And they're breathing, their actual breathing action will keep the battery charged for their pacemaker. So we no longer have to go into people and cut the battery and cut them open to change their batteries once a year. This piezoelectric crystal will keep it. We only have to actually change the batteries out because the batteries go bad every 8 or 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you're breathing.
Yeah.
Produce electricity with a piezo crystal.
While I'm thinking about this, somebody calculate out how many BTUs and that a human body goes through a day and how many calories are burnt just in order to produce that many BTUs. But Marcus clarified down in the chat room, said, I'm not saying that this stuff isn't possible, but there is no capacitor that will power a car. Not that's public domain anyway. That's the whole key, man. It's all about engineering. You know, these boost caps, I'm getting excited when I see things like supercapacitors come out there because I understand that if you get the perfect supercapacitor and then you learn how to make super efficient wire that will, allow it to transmit energy without resistance. What do they call that, doggone it? What's the terminology I'm looking for? Help me out.
You're looking for a superconductor.
Yeah, superconductor. So imagine.
You don't want to do that.
Yeah, but listen.
You can do that at room temperature. We have achieved superconductor type reactions from room temperature copper.
Okay, so there you go. So that's what I'm saying. If you take the superconductor copper using the method that you're talking about, add that to a supercapacitor, that means you ain't got no restriction to force. That's the whole problem with everything that we use. There's all resistive loads, no matter what it is. Even the smallest microchip that we got creates some sort of resistance, which in turn creates some heat losses. That's why you have to be able to cool these processors down. The faster you use it, the more you demand of it, the more resistance, the hotter that thing becomes.
That's right.
And if you could take that heat away from it and make that thing super efficient, there you go.
We have. Through manipulating the magnetic field, you can allow copper to do a whole lot more than what it's rated for.
Well, we know that heat is the enemy of everything.
And we've eliminated a lot of that heat. We can put 30 amps through wire rated for 0.9 amps and get zero temperature rise.
Well, there you go, man.
That's all through the geometry of the coil.
And even at that, if you have a way to take that heat away as fast as it's coming in, then that will never reach its thermal breakdown and it will never fail.
That's right. You'll never damage the insulation. You'll never damage any of the material that you're using to wrap.
And so my research that has to do with plasma basically is trying to show people a different way of using energy. It's all the same thing. No matter what it ends up being or how you want to name it, energy's energy no matter how you look at it. It's the after effects of energy that we got to try to fight against, like such as heat, you know, when you're trying to run your electric fan. Go feel your electric fan motor after you run it for a while. It gets hot. Well, that's now going to start blowing that hot air through the front of that fan, and that fan will become less efficient the hotter it gets. And eventually, the insulation on the fan motor will reach its thermal breakdown, and it will fail, and that fan, you'll have to go out and buy you a new one. But what if you took the motion of that fan as that blade is going around, and you use that motion of that blade spinning around to not only blow the air across, but to use it as a circulation pump to circulate water or some sort of coolant through and across that coil of wire so that it will use the heat transfer system to take that heat away from it, that electric fan would never fail. Never.
It would never, ever fail. Is the insulation gets too hot. The coils get too hot and they burn through the insulation.
Yeah.
The only reason they ever fail.
It causes a short.
And if you did the exact same thing with the bearings in the fan, the bearings would never fail.
Exactly.
Load them magnetically. The whole thing is a generator.
There you go. Magnetic levitation using frictionless bearings, and it's been done. You can go on eBay. You can buy it. They got little solar panel setups that, you know, basically spins a little gizmo around and it's sitting there floating on magnets. They have a magnetic levitation toys that basically are frictionless bearings using magnets.
Right.
And so if you can do that on a toy, you can do that on a fan. You can make that fan do the same work. All you want to do is move the air to get a cool flow going on. But in the process, without those bearings getting hot, those bearings on those toys will never fail because they're not going to reach their thermal breakdown. And that is the key to the whole deal. In all the alternative energy out there, the key is to be able to ensure that there's no way that resistance will cause failure due to heat losses.
The only way that would ever happen is if you got a high enough rotational speed with the air as friction to cause heat.
But you realize how fast that thing would have to be going?
Not better than the speed of sound.
How fast does them rockets come back into the atmosphere or a meteor from space, you know?
Yeah. faster than the speed of sound.
Yeah, if you got a fan that's moving faster than the speed of sound, you better have some really good materials holding that thing together.
Yeah, it better be bolted down.
Yeah, it's gonna blow you across the room and out the house.
If the bolts weld that sucker down.
That's what I'm talking about.
What I'm getting at is that would be the only way that air as friction would cause a problem.
Well, the whole thing is, and even that, you know, air pressure. You can literally build a bearing using air pressure, because if you got enough air pressure, it'll float, man. That's how the hovercraft did it. The hovercraft was able to lift a 100-pound man up off the ground and ride around on a cushion of air. Hydraulics. Science tells us that you can't pressurize a liquid. So you use liquid to literally raise crane booms clear up and, you know, on top of buildings. And hydraulics is used so much, we understand how physics works. So why not take that same knowledge and use all these things in such an efficient manner? The pieces of the puzzle are there, people.
Schauberger is a great teacher.
Yeah. Man, I'll tell you what, it don't matter how small it is, if you can keep it cool, then you can make it last, period. Because everything out there has a thermal breakdown. It don't matter what it is, everything on this planet has a thermal breakdown right before it gets ready to catch fire. I think it's like, 212 degrees or something for paper? I can't remember. Have to look it back up.
That's water turning steam at sea level.
Okay, well, I need to look up the... somebody look up real quick at what temperature will paper ignite? I think it might be 300. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
I think you're right. 300, 320, 30, something somewhere in that neighborhood. In the low 300s.
Yeah, so if you could rub paper together at the speed of sound, but somehow move that doggone
burst in the plane fit fast.
Yeah, if you could somehow or another take that heat energy away from that paper, the heat that's being generated to that paper, if you had some way to cool that down at the same time while you were running it at the speed of sound, it'd never burst into flames because it wouldn't be able to reach its breakdown.
Exactly. You got to pull the heat off.
Yep.
That's how any heat engine works. A lot of people think heat engines run off of heat. No, they don't. They run off a difference in temperature. Because the thing is, if you build a heat engine and you put 1,000 degrees, but it can only get rid of 1,500 degrees as fast as you put the 2,000 in, it's going to burn up. You've got to get the heat off you've got to be able to get the heat off faster then you can put it in. And then it will never wear out. It will run forever as long as you can put the heat in it.
Yep.
And that's how the cold steam turbine works. You're not making heat. You're not burning wood. You're not burning coal or gas. You're using electricity to compress the freon gas in your air conditioner. So what you're doing is you're actually moving the hot air, the heat, you're removing the heat from the air in your house and throwing it outside. What the cold steam turbine does is it takes that excess heat that you're throwing away and turns it back into electricity and feeds it right back into your air conditioning system. Over and over again.
Yep. Somebody look up dielectric chart. I want to see the dielectric chart of materials. There's a chart out there that will tell you what materials used as dielectrics, what their breakdown point is, and essentially, from my memory, what research I've done, glass is the best dielectric. So essentially, that's the separator between the capacitors. So
actually, the best dielectric you could possibly get is a vacuum.
Well, yeah, okay. But either way, when you're talking about, you know, thermal breakdown, which is the key to why things fail,
you know,
without getting into the frequency side of it, because you can vibrate something so rapidly, but the frequency in exchange produces friction, which in turn produces heat that is finally back to the thermal breakdown again.
Right, exactly.
So
exactly.
No matter how you look at it, heat in any machine out there is the ultimate enemy. Water is the most stable molecule on the planet, all right? Water will separate, it will come back together, it will produce water, all right? And so you can utilize water as a fuel source, and you can tap into the energy of water. You could use heat in order to control water, all right? So those two are a couple key factors in being able to use, you know, basically create your holy grail of free energy devices. If you could learn how to utilize the heat that would normally be a bad thing. See, water may be the most stable molecule on the planet, but it is also one of the most destructive molecules on the planet when used improperly or properly. Like, for example, erosion. Water can literally cut through stone. And water can literally cut through steel if you pressurize it ahead of time. You send that water down. They got saws out there that literally use water to cut steel.
You can also run your cars with a clean emission.
Yeah. So, there you go, man. You build a supercapacitor using a vacuum as the dielectric, then you got it made. You can charge and discharge it, and you don't got nothing to break down. If somehow or another you got to reset the vacuum or something, you just let in some atmosphere and vacuum it back down. You know, like clearing it out, shorten it with a screwdriver. I mean, to me it seems common sense. It seems so simple. It just blows my mind that more people aren't willing to jump on the bandwagon to take all of what we've learned so far through this time. We're in the year 2017. When I was a kid, I thought by the year 2000 we'd be flying around in Jetson-style cars. I got ripped off.
Even with our technology today, you don't have to use electricity. You can get power mechanically.
Yeah.
You can put in an Archimedes wheel. That's a wheel with balances that change position. That every time it goes to a different point, a weight moves to the outside edge and pulls it farther. That Archimedes wheel, with depending on how much you weight it, can turn a generator, can turn a motor mechanically so that you can draw power off of that motor.
You know,
that's just
is,
a mechanical device.
Yeah, the Wurtz pump is four times more efficient than the Archimedes wheel. True.
Well, Sky Blue Eyes in the TCT chat room said steam engines were more efficient than 60%, especially those that closed loop condensers.
Right.
See, there's another thing. They say you can't run a car on water. We've been doing it forever.
Yeah.
We just turned the water into steam.
100 years ago off of steam.
Yeah.
I have been on the same program many times. There is nothing on the face of this earth that I know of that is more powerful than water.
There you go.
I mean, water, actually, if you think about it, water is 3.7 times more powerful than gasoline.
Well, between water and heat, you got your holy grail of free energy, because if you learn to utilize those, it's hotter than heck out in the summer, right? And in the summertime, you got to run your air conditioner. Well, in your kitchen, you have a refrigerator that's using the thermal exchange system that is taking and putting hot air back into your house. So why do you got your refrigerator, the back of your refrigerator, in the same room you're trying to cool with your deal? Why not take that vent, that heat from the refrigerator, from the back of the refrigerator, out of the house, and then your air conditioner wouldn't have to work as hard? And that's just one example of many. You've got incandescent light bulbs and even fluorescent light bulbs and potentially, at the very lesser stage, LED lighting systems that are going to produce heat. And so, if you vent the heat from your lighting system outside the house, For every little bit of deal that you use to make that air conditioner have to work less, that means the less the compressor will have to kick on, and so on. You see what I'm saying?
The thing is, you put a system on it to where you throw a switch so that in the wintertime, the heat coming off the backside of your refrigerator goes in your house. In the summertime, it goes outside.
Yeah.
It's too simple. Everything we've talked about is plug and play. All the technology exists. Every piece of it. It's on the shelf.
Yep.
Just buy it, plug it in, and play it. I mean, it's plug and play.
Yeah.
Come on.
And look.
We're not a daggone thing that we don't already have.
All right, look. Here's another thing. And I know this for a fact because I took what used to be an old infrared heater and I exchanged the heat lamp bulbs from that. I exchanged them with regular incandescent light bulbs and heated my room all winter long with less wattage than it would have took me to run it with the other. And so that tells you that if you got an air conditioner going and you got all these lamps in your room and you know that heat rises, so it's going to fill the ceiling up with heat. Well, the heat's got to go somewhere. Can't get out the roof if you're insulated good in your attic. And so it's going to continue to fill up that room, and it's going to make your air conditioner have to work harder and harder. But if you design a lighting system to not be like pumping heat into your room, it's going to be more efficient, all right? And every little bit you do to help that out is going to raise the efficiency level of that house. And that's... that is so ridiculously simple. And you don't see nobody doing that.
Use incandescent light bulbs in your house in the wintertime. That way you get light and heat.
Yeah.
Because LEDs in the summertime, you get plenty of light with less electric use. I mean, duh. Come on. How about the people that are heating their house with electric furnaces? So why don't you put the heating coil inside of a box with Peltorial devices around it, that's where your fan blows the air across the Peltorial, keeping one side cool while your electric heating coils are heating it up on the other side. So now all of a sudden you're getting hot air to heat your house and making electricity with the same electricity you're using. Think about that a minute.
Well, the whole thing is, the system that we're talking about was not designed for efficiency. It was designed with planned obsolescence and for inefficiency. If you're the man selling electricity, what do you want to sell to somebody? You want to sell them a 500 watt heater, or do you want to sell them a 5,000 watt heater?
Right.
Because I want to make more money off my electricity. They're saying, oh, well, you know, you're costing us more fuel because you're using us, so we got to charge you more. Well, if you got a hydroelectric dam running 24/7, where's the fuel coming from, knucklehead?
And if you've got a magnetic generator in your basement, you don't need to be attached to that grid system.
And that means you ain't going to be paying them. And that's why they're starting to come around, starting to attack people that have solar panels. If you, you can't run your house off of just solar panels. You have to be part of the grid system because your solar panels are taking money away from the system.
Right.
Wait a second. Wasn't it the government that said that we needed to become self-efficient? Wasn't the government the one that said that we had an energy crisis? Wasn't the government the one that said that we need to have clean, renewable, alternative energies, and now you want to try to punish those who attempt to do so?
The owners of the grid system want to continue to create power. They just want it for free on their end so that they can continue to charge us to maintain the grid system.
That's like selling somebody a glass of water. That's like selling somebody a glass of water when the doggone earth is three-quarters covered in water.
Right.
You see what I mean?
There's nothing free about perpetuating a grid system.
And people wonder why I call it mad science. People wonder why I call it mad science. It's mad science because it's ridiculous. If you're standing out next to the ocean and you didn't pay enough attention to science class to understand how to literally desalinate some water, and you're standing next to the ocean and you die of thirst... Well, I'm sorry about your luck, man. You should have listened in science. But those folks over there in Dubai, they listened in science. They not only built the lander that their skyscrapers are standing on, but they got huge desalination plants that supply all the fresh water they need through the entire deal. And if you don't think it's possible, go talk to the U.S. Navy. Ask them how it is that they can run a 650 PSI or 1250 PSI boiler for very long without hauling in a bunch of fresh water. They got onboard desalination plants that take the fresh water, because if you try to run salt water through a hot boiler system, that thing ain't going to last very long at all. Plus, you run the risk of getting yourself some doggone toxic gas coming out of the salt being separated by the heat and pressure.
Think about this a minute. The aircraft carriers in the United States carry a complement of anywhere from 5,000 to 6,000 people. I mean, each person drinking a half a gallon of water a day. I mean, that's a lot of water. That ship is not big enough to have tanks enough to hold that much water for 2 weeks. Couldn't do it.
That's right.
The desalinization process, they can desalinize seawater 50,000 gallons every 24 hours. Think about that.
That's a lot of water.
The hydrogen systems on the ships.
Yeah.
Right. Think about it. Yes.
They're floating. They're going to be floating on their fuel with hydrogen technology. They've already planned to do it. They're going to be floating on their fuel. That means less weight of fuel that they have. They got thousands of gallons worth of tanks that will hold that much fuel, because they got to run this fuel to run these engines and stuff. Well, if you're running these engines off of hydrogen technology, you got all that extra space available.
Right. Think about that a minute. I love it. I really love it.
And they say there ain't no such thing as free energy. Anybody out there who wants to tell me that there ain't no free energy has not been listening, period.
There's a company in Indonesia that does cargo ships that go 40 minutes on a tablespoon of diesel fuel.
Well, see, if you take any fuel, it doesn't matter what it is, because anything on this planet would burn if it was atomized down or reached its thermal breakdown point. If I'm a liar, if what I'm saying is not scientifically possible, then I want you all to explain to me volcanic activity. I want you to tell me how that volcano can melt rocks, metal, steel, and everything else on this planet. You throw your car inside of a flaming volcano and see how long it lasts. Now, if I don't know what the heck I'm talking about, if you can't burn any substance on this planet, then there ain't no such thing as volcanoes. They're a hoax.
I love that. I like that.
Well, I'm just trying to get real with the people.
They don't exist.
Yeah, volcanoes don't exist, man.
It's a hoax. It doesn't really exist. And neither does volcanoes. An earthquake. Oh, come on, man. You're just dreaming about that one. You expect me to believe there's such a thing as an earthquake?
Well,
nah.
Here, you want to talk about power? You know what doggone skyscrapers are made out of, right?
Right.
Steel, concrete, rebar. You know, and all the buildings, bricks and mortar and all that, there is enough power in one earthquake to literally level every bit of it, including the bridges, man, and cause a tsunami to go clear across the ocean and wipe somebody out on the opposite side. You want to tell me that ain't power? Nature has provided more power, more resources than we could ever use in a trillion, trillion, trillion lifetimes into infinity and beyond.
And when the supercapacitors are perfected, then we'll even be able to capture lightning.
Yep.
That's a major energy source.
Yes, yes.
I'm telling you.
I've said it 5 or 6 times on this show. I've said it several hundred times all total. I mean, if you don't believe in such a thing as free energy, you need to sit under a shady tree and think about it.
I see the funny comment. Marcus put a comment in there. Actually, three comments. He said, water, the big scam. I distill our water, rain tank in the yard, too. He said, bottled tap water. The emperor had no clothes. Or has no clothes.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You distill the water at your house, you're killing everything good in it.
Marcus is the hero of today. The emperor has no clothes. That's what everybody should be saying. The emperor has no clothes. Stop standing around pretending the emperor has clothes when it's blatantly obvious that don't. Energy's free, folks. When you learn how to utilize it, when you take all the basic science and the knowledge and the technology that's available to you right now and decide to use it, you'll get exactly what you want. You'll get the free energy. You'll get out from underneath the thumb of the man. That's the whole entire scam of everything. If they can control the resources, the water, the food, the electricity, then they can control you. It's plain and simple. You don't pay your light bill, you go over there, turn the switch on, they done beat you to the punch and turn the switch off, and now you ain't got no lights. And you call up the man boo-hooing, oh, well, what are you going to do to turn my electricity on? Well, you're going to pay all your money up or you ain't getting no electricity, fool. That's the way they're going to treat you. And you think the government and all them care about you? No, they don't care. The corporations don't care about you. They care about their bottom line. They care about how thick their wallet is. So, you know, if you ever want to get out from underneath the thumb of this system, if you ever want to stop the oil, the wars over oil and resource, the only way is to become energy independent as a people. I'm talking about we the people. You don't even have to take down their system. All you got to do is build your system side by side, and eventually they become obsolete. That's the plan. Anybody disagree with that?
I don't disagree with it, but there is a minor problem. There are people that live in apartment complexes that they don't have the land access for solar panels or wind turbines. They can't possibly do that. So why do they not throw in with friends of theirs that do have
yeah.
the land to put up solar panels? Join together. It's called networking, folks.
Yes.
You know what networking means?
It's also called that if you don't like where you live, you can get up and move and go to some place that's more convenient. So, you know, as far as the people in, you know, skyscrapers who just want, they don't want to mess around with this kind of stuff. They just want to be able to go over and turn on the light. Well, they can stay under the thumb of the man as long as they like. You know, it's a choice thing. But for the average Joe who's sick and tired of all the craziness going on, it's about time all the average Joes gather together and start troubleshooting all these free energy devices and finding the solutions to make sure that they work. Everyone out there who's invented an alternative energy device and came into a stumbling block, there is somebody out there that has the answer to show them where they went wrong. And if you could get together and you can troubleshoot those devices, it's like this. I've said this a million and one times. You can't sell a widget if everyone out there in this world owns a widget. And so the companies ain't going to be able to sell you free electricity if you can produce your own free electricity. And they can't throw everybody in jail for building a generator. There's 9 billion people on the planet. There ain't enough jail space. So maybe they just start whacking us. Oh, man. See, it's a conundrum. It's an enigma. It's a riddle within a riddle hidden behind an unsolvable equation. Why it is that people allow a small minority of individuals to destroy everything that is humanity. And if you're going to drive down the road, throw trash out on the side of the road, then don't complain about polluting the planet. If you're going to stand out there with a wooden stick and a paper sign saying save the trees, then don't be out there with the wooden stick and the paper sign because you're a hypocrite. You should be out planting a tree. Save the tree. So be out there and hug a tree. Chain yourself to a tree. Don't let them cut it down. You stop using nature and nature will take back whatever it is you do not use. So nature's got that part under control. The rest of it's up to us. We'll decide how we're going to use resources that nature allows us to use without destroying or disrupting nature. We know how to do this. We can show you how to do this. There are tons of brilliant people all over this planet willing to come to the table right now on Shazoo's Radio Network, Awake Radio, TCT, Haggy Shack Radio, and all the multitudes of other radio networks that give us the courtesy of rebroadcasting this stream. For all you listeners out there that really say you love the planet, you want to save the planet, you need to change your thoughts. You need to save mankind, because it ain't the planet that's in danger, it's mankind that's in danger. Planet's doing fine. Everything that you use out there, there ain't nothing we've ever created that nature can't destroy. Nature can take a tornado and tear down your house. It's like the big bad wolf standing out there huffing and puffing. You built your house out of sticks. Sorry about your luck, brother. You lost your house. It got windy outside. You built your house out of straw. Sorry about your luck. Huh?
You built your house out of sticks. Okay, so the tornado tore it down. Duh. Just get some more sticks and build another one.
That's right. You built your house out of bricks, and your house withstood the windy days. It got a little bit of damage during the tornado, but hey, why don't you just next time, instead of building that house square, use some geometry and put a circle around it so the wind wraps around your house instead of wraps your house?
Now you're talking genuine, true sense.
Yep.
Build your house out of sticks or straw. The wind's going to tear it up, so duh, you didn't have a lot invested in it. So you just build another one. That's the mentality of some people. Now, I'm going to build my house out of brick. And so a tornado comes along and it does a little damage and, I got to fix this. But if you did the math and the design, you could build that house to where the strongest tornado that has ever existed, ever hit the earth would not tear it up. It's going to cost you more time. It's going to cost you more money to build it. But you're not going to have to do any repairs no matter what.
That's
right.
The
only thing is, you don't want to be outside when that tornado hits.
We can supposedly build a house in space. We can build a house underwater. We can build a house on top of water. We can build a house that will withstand the wind. We can build a house that will withstand the rain. We can build a house that will withstand the earthquakes. We have the technology available to literally build an indestructible house so that somebody, if it flooded, the house would float. If it, whatever. You, look, it isn't beyond the realms of possibility for us to build things that would last for a long, long, long time. Nothing's going to last forever as long as you ain't maintaining it. Once you stop maintaining it.
Even a super efficient underground house.
That's right. If you stop maintaining it, nature will take it back. That's the rule of the game. Nature.
You know, I saw a program one time. It was called Earth Without Man. And they were talking about all the things that engineers said would outlast mankind, blah, blah, blah. And one of them they were talking about was Hoover Dam.
Yeah.
Hoover Dam will be here 3,000 years after man's gone. Then they got this, really, some engineers got in and started digging into it. They said, whoa, wait a minute. Why do we have 25 men working on Hoover Dam maintaining it? Why would we need to maintain something that's going to last 3,000 years after man's gone? Why? Because there are certain microorganisms that grow inside of the exhaust ports of the dam. And if they grow, if they're not maintained and cleaned, then these microorganisms will clog it up. Then the water will come to a height that it will actually overflow the top of the dam. And the most dangerous thing of any dam, there's two things. Number one, the water gets high enough to breach the top. That will destroy a dam. Number two, the foundation. If the water gets high enough, it does not breach the top, but it gets high enough that it can actually pressure-wise go out and wash dirt out from underneath the foundation. The dam will fail. Hoover Dam would not last 50 years if it was not from tank maintenance.
So with that, with all that said, Raymond, who's in charge, man or nature?
Nature.
I rest my case.
All right.
Hi, Jermaine. How's it going? Yeah, he done hung up. He didn't like us anymore. He might be having internet trouble. He's got Honest Abe's used ISP service.
He's back.
How's your brain?
I'm back.
Ah. So anyway, Jermaine, since you just kind of like popped in there, who's in charge, nature or man?
Nature.
There you go. There's one smart young man.
I told you he's a genius, didn't I?
Yep. Look, don't save the planet. Planet's got it all handled. We need to save ourselves and work in harmony with nature, because if we don't, then nature will take care of the situation. So, with that said, with all the technology we've got available right now, we should be right now working towards efficiency. Efficiency is going to come before self-sustain. If they ain't efficient, they'll never sustain themselves, period. If you want
the internal combustion engine being 36% efficient, to me, that says I got a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah, there you go, man. Every bit of improvement. You take that heat off of that engine and utilize that heat for something else. Water will boil at 212 degrees. How hot do you think the engine gets while you're driving down the road, even though it has water circulating through it?
Well, that's why you put a pressure cap on your radiator.
Yeah. And so, with that said, why not take that heat energy off there, focus it in, and maybe make you a steam boost engine on the back of that thing, where it'll build up some pressure and then give you a boost whenever you want a hot rod a thing or something.
Or put filterial devices on your radiator to take that excess heat and turn it into electricity. Let your fan blow across the cooling fins on your filterial device.
The electronic industry is literally outperforming the mechanical industry by leaps and bounds.
I mean,
because the mechanical industry out there is under the gun of regulations this and regulations that, and they basically got a ball and chain on, whereas the electronic industry, because there's so much money to be made in electronics and advancements, man, they're able to run free. They got TVs that you can fit on your wrist that'll be thin like a shirt, man, with little push-button screens. So, you know, they're able to go where boldly go where no man's gone before, but the mechanical industry, they're failing. They're failing basic science because they haven't realized to this point there's a thermal breakdown for everything. If you can defy that thermal breakdown by moving that energy away from it, that energy in the form of heat away from it, utilize it for some other purpose, then those parts will never fail. Yeah, I would buy a car that you could say to me that you could get a billion miles to this car because it ain't going to break down on you. You spend more money trying to maintain your car and earn a living. If you go back and forth to work and drive maybe 40 miles a day for a whole year, you're going to have parts begin to fail. Your brakes will fail. Just your parts. Wear and tear. You know? And that costs money. That's a brake job these days ain't cheap. Especially if you want to have somebody else do it for you, because you ain't got the time or the knowledge.
You know, I'll tell you what. I've got a sneaky feeling that if somebody was smart enough to build a car like that, they would never sell it. They'd rent it to you.
Well, here's an idea for a design. You know how thick brake pads are?
Yeah.
Well, the brake pads are made to withstand a lot of friction, a lot of heat, all right? But even after a certain point, When they get hot, they start to fail. They reach the thermal breakdown. You start getting brake dust all over the place, and that brake dust basically turns into grit like sandpaper, and it'll start wearing down the rotor and start wearing down the shoes. And so imagine if you could put a cooling system into your brake shoes that would keep those brake shoes down to before their thermal breakdown point. You'd have brake shoes that wouldn't fail.
Well, let's do it this way. Don't use brake shoes. Use an electric motor.
Well, there you go.
Because if you reverse an electric motor, then it makes electricity. And that's how electric cars today are designed. You don't have brakes.
Yeah, they also use it as regenerative braking. And exactly. Basically, while they're using the lens effect to actually stop the vehicle.
Right. Exactly.
If you take any electric motor and you short the wires, the input wires together, and try to turn it over, it's a break right there.
Right there.
That's Lenz's law.
It's taking electricity, recharging your battery every time you put it on the brakes.
Yep. And so instead of...
like I said, and I'm going to say it again. I've already said it 25 times, but I'm going to say it again. For every action, there's opposite and equal reaction.
Yep. Right now, there's a lot of craziness going on in this world that could be, like, so avoided. You know, people's all out there, all up into politics and fighting with each other and acting ridiculous and stuff. And they're sort of wanting to save the planet. They're wanting to, like, have their rights and freedoms. And they don't understand that while they're out there wasting their time protesting the governments and the corporations of the world, they're missing an opportunity to literally build the system that they want to create. You ain't going to do no good out there protesting.
For them. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The people pulling the sign, the paper of the wood stick with the paper sign, they are the people that are too damn lazy to get out and do it. They want somebody else to do it for them.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing is, if you want to save the trees, then get out there and plant them. Plant the trees. Protect them.
Hey, now that is a really good idea. They want to save the trees? Hey, they spend 4 or 5 hours, okay, marching, demonstrating, save the trees, save the trees. But they spend 2 weeks getting prepared for this demonstration. If they use that same time and that same energy to go out and volunteer to plant trees, we wouldn't have a problem.
That's right.
I mean, what? They just want somebody else to do it for them. They're too damn lazy to do it themselves.
Well, we have
daggone couch.
Like I said, we have everything necessary to resolve every single issue under the sun.
And you know, Weyerhaeuser, one of the major paper producers in the United States, they plant, for every tree they cut down, they plant 3. Go and volunteer.
Help them out.
Help them out. No joke. They're trying to do their best. They know in the future we will need more paper. And paper is made from wood. It's made from trees. Help them.
We save all the trees. We make it out of hemp.
There you go.
Right. There you go.
Or, like Thomas mentioned a while back, kudzu, you know? It's something...
Instead of 30 years to grow a tree, take 3 months to grow the hemp.
Yeah, or kudzu.
48 hours to grow the kudzu. Thomas has already figured out chemically how to take kudzu and turn it directly into gasoline.
Well, there you go. See...
Kudzu is perfect for gasoline.
Yeah.
There's so many possibilities. We have all the materials. We have all the technology. We've got all the science. And all the people want freedom. They want, they don't want to be under the thumb of the power companies. They don't want to be under the thumb of the corporations. But they keep on paying them. They keep on letting them get all the advancements. Like I said, in the mechanical industry as opposed to the electronics industry, electronics is running wild, and they're going to let electronics run wild because a lot of those parts are made out of stuff that comes from crude oil. There's a lot of plastic in your computer. There's a lot of plastic in your TV. There's a lot of plastic in a lot of stuff, and it all comes from crude oil. So they don't care. Make as much plastic as you want. We'll sell you more crude oil. And then when you're done with that plastic, don't recycle it. Just throw it in trash because we got more coming.
And we can make that same plastic out of hemp oil that is not toxic to humans.
Yep.
Right. I mean, the solution to the problem is so simple, nobody can see it. It's too simple.
Well, that's what my friend Jim got mad at me one time because I explained to him how electricity really functions. And the way I explained it to him was the same exact way you would explain how you know, plumbing works, because plumbing and electricity both have something in common. They both pressurize, and they both have valves and different sizes of pipe and that kind of stuff. And the same physics that works in plumbing also works in electricity, including lens effect, where if you try to pump water into the same pump that you're trying to get the water out of, it's obvious that at some point those two pressures are going to equalize and stop the process. And so when I explained the entirety to him, he got mad because his college didn't say it would that in that easy terminology. His college made it all sound complex, so that the average Joe, you might as well be speaking Chinese to somebody who's speaking French. They don't understand what the heck it is you're talking about. But when you explain it in a term that everybody can explain, suddenly the college-educated man was angry because, oh, no, you're just trying to oversimplify. It can't be that easy. And I said, brother, look right there on my workbench. You can see it. It's working right there. So tell me mathematically and physically and through the laws of physics and science how that's occurring if it's not possible. His jaw dropped down. He got mad and stormed off because he couldn't take his head past what the school book said. He couldn't take his head past the indoctrination. And it just, no, it's not, it couldn't be that simple. And he left.
Yeah, I've had that same situation happen to me several times. I had a 38-foot, 8-inch I-beam. And I was loading it on my truck and one of my flatbed trailers, and I had already prepared everything, and I was fastening everything down. That I'd already bought the beam, they got it to length, blah, 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 and they loaded it on with a forklift, and the forklift was done. It was just me and my truck and my trailer, and I'm tying everything down. And this kid, 22, 23 years old, whatever, he walked up and he said, oh, that won't work. That's impossible. You can't do that. And I just simply looked at him and said, son, since you're the expert, does that mean I need to go back and get the other six and bring them back?
Huh.
I mean, duh, that won't work. That's impossible.
Yeah.
You can't do that. But I've already done it six other times. Does that mean because I can't do it, it's impossible, it will not work?
Well, see.
So I need to take your expertise and apply it to my life.
You can run.
Wait a minute. What does X mean? It means a have been. What is a spurt? A useless drop of water. You're going to tell me that I cannot do what I'm doing because it is impossible and I've already done it six times?
You can run a diesel engine on diesel. You can run a diesel engine on French fry oil. You can run a diesel engine on oil that was used to make donuts. You can run an engine oil on any kind of oil, including hemp oil, including any oil.
Back up. A diesel engine you can run on any kind of oil?
Yep.
A diesel engine can run on anything that is combustible. It does not have to be oil.
It
can be coal dust.
Designed
to burn in the first place.
I was getting there.
Now, if it'll run on coal dust, it will run on dry grass dust. So you can.
I was getting there.
Grass, grind it down, and feed it into your diesel engine and run it.
I was getting there.
All right, thank you.
All right. I enjoy your passion, but I was getting there.
All right, go ahead. I want to hear it.
Every single thing on this planet is carbon-based. That's what the doggone science book said. Everything is carbon-based. So everything, including water, is fuel. Everything on this planet will burn. Under the right circumstances, anything will burn. And so with that said, if you gotta burn, well, tell me how a Stirling engine works. Off of heat difference. It's cool on one side, it's hot on the other. It's using heat, pressure. An internal combustion engine. You fire any kind of fuel in there, heat expands, which pushes down the piston, which turns the camshaft, and so on down the line. anything can be used as fuel. You could use your grass clippings out of your yard for fuel, for Pete's sake. When yes, you burn firewood, you didn't lose the firewood, you just got different materials. You got creosote in the stack, which is a fuel. You got ash out the bottom, which is now a substance that you can use for many different uses, one of which is making lye soap. You just change the chemistry and the shape of it. Their own laws of physics said energy can neither be created nor destroyed. That includes you when you're gone from this world. When you finally die and rot off into the planet, you become part of the system again. You're recycled. Everything's recycled. And if you know how to use the power that is locked into every bit of whatever's around you, that's why in the doggone, I think it was Back to the Future 2 or 3, when Doc Brown comes in from the future and he starts digging in the trash and pulling out all the trash and throwing it into Mr. Fusion and he's turning it all into fuel. They were telling you right there and then on that doggone show that everything is fuel if you want to use it right. If you understand the physics and science and chemistry, then everything there is fuel. And then whenever he said, well, do we got enough room to get through here? To get up to 88 miles an hour, the guy said, roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
I love it. I love it.
You want to get there, folks? Let's get there. Otherwise, we're going to have to... You know, this is like job security, Raymond.
Yep.
Mad Science Show will always be around as long as there's the lack of common sense and people need to hear common sense and science. We're going to be around because until this world starts heading in a direction, and even to the extent till they finally get to the point where they got it all resolved and we got all these issues figured out, it's going to take brilliant minds coming to the table to talk about and discuss technologies existing and new and so on down the line, new knowledge that we've learned to move us to the direction that mankind needs to go to be able to work in perfect harmony with nature. If you want to save the planet, if you're one of those people from Greenpeace or any of the other environmentalist agencies and you really care about this planet, then you need to be over here at the Mad Science Show and listening to what we got to say, because there are resolutions to the problem, and the problem that you're trying to fight against, you're not going to ever succeed by being out there protesting and throwing trash or whatever at the corporations. They don't care. They have a system that will throw you in jail, fine you, and make themselves more money. When you go to jail, you make them money. When you go to the hospital, you make them money. When you go to the war, you make them money. Everything that you do, you make them money. Now, when are you going to take that time to make yourself some money?
You know, the thing is, when someone tells you, you can't do that, the response you should give instantly is, hey, you see that bush over there? Yeah. Well, go there and hide behind it and watch.
That's it.
You can't do that. Well, I suggest you go hide and watch, okay? Because I'm going to do it. It's going to be done. That's all there is to it. Somebody's going to do it, and I'm going to be the somebody. It's that simple.
I wish I could clone myself. There was a talk in the chat room about clones. I wish I could clone myself, because I'd have a team. I wish I could clone all y'all. See, if we had like a million of each of us, man, we could get some things done.
Yes, we could.
So everybody go out and get a job, whatever job you want, and we'll pile our money in this bank account, and then we will start our own corporation called the People's Corporation, where we will build things and show them to the people and prove the existence of possibilities.
And not charge a daggone penny.
Yeah.
With the real people that back it and start with.
There you go, man.
I mean, you know, do you have any idea how many beautiful, unbelievable inventions that have been made, and this, that, and another, that would make mankind's life a lot easier and better, that were, they're forgotten about, because the person that did it
wanted to make $1 million.
Well, I want to build a spaceship.
Everybody got to do it. Like, there was a jet pilot from the Korean War that, after the war, invented a device that you could put it in a cup of water for a cup of coffee, and in 20 seconds, it would have the water boiling. But he would not reveal his secret because he wanted somebody to buy it. But the thing is, it was a secret. So nobody trusted it because he wouldn't tell anybody. So he died, and the secret went with him.
Yep. Well,
so now it's, what, 80 years later?
I want to build a... I want to build a spaceship big enough for all of us and everybody who wants to go with us, and we'll go find another rock and make our utopia.
You know, before we started the show, Larry said he said the secret of what exactly I'm talking about, and all it is cavitation. The man somehow figured out how to use some kind of radio wave or cycles or whatever you want to call it, Hertz.
Yeah.
And put it inside of a little round copper or brass ball to where nobody could see what it was. And all he was doing is generating electromagnetic radio waves that agitated the water, and the friction of the water being agitated caused it to heat up.
Well, and another thing about that...
Figure out the man's secret, but he died poor and broke because he was not willing to share his secret.
And another thing about that heat and water thing is that you don't...
I come up with something new, I am not going to charge a dime for it. Not one penny. I want the world to know about it.
Listen, another thing about that is that, for example, the microwave oven, you know, you got a 120-volt transformer, and they're using induction through a core to go to a higher-wound deal to ramp up the voltage. Well, you can do the same thing with high voltage. I mean, you told me about that taser you got right there with like a 9-volt battery or whatever that will put out thousands of volts of electricity, which is high frequency, that you could then in turn turn the heat. You can cook your water. You can boil your water using doggone high frequency. That's what it does. A microwave is a high frequency wave, and you can rattle that water so fast that you produce friction, which in turn produces heat and cooks your food.
Good thing about 87 million volts.
Well, then, with that said, then by the time you get that doggone water hot, you'll keep it rattling until it builds up to where you literally got a hydrogen explosion.
Let's do it.
See, that's it, man.
I watch.
How do you produce a microwave in a microwave oven, man? It uses a magnetron. What's going on in the magnetron? Once you understand how a magnetron actually functions, you'll be surprised. You know, and even the modern day magnetrons or microwaves don't have a microwave oven transformer in them anymore. They got essentially a circuit that works just like the Slayer exciter circuit works.
Right.
And so you can ramp that voltage up from, you know, 12 volts to thousands of volts. Send it in there at a higher frequency, and we can adjust it to any frequency range we want. But the thing about it is, once you understand that once that frequency gets so high that there's something occurring there, that high frequency, the reason why in the back of your television or any of the old CRT monitors, even plasma TVs, they have to have high voltage, is because it's energizing that gas inside there. And once that gas is energized into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, now you got heat. You got light. And inside the microwave oven, inside the back of that TV, they have to have a special wire going from the magnetron inside there, or the transformer inside there? What they call those doggone things? Flyback transformer. Alright, you gotta have a specific kind of insulation, otherwise that high frequency will literally burn through the insulation of the wire. So that's why we use our electricity down at 60 hertz, so that we're not burning our stuff out as quickly. And so you know that you can generate heat with high voltage. You can generate plasma with high voltage, which in turn is more heat and more light. Inside that microwave magnetron, there's a vacuum inside there. There's a magnet on one side, there's a magnet on the outside that guide that energy into a specific direction. So when the element inside that magnetron is sent with that high voltage, a high frequency, it rattles it, that tungsten element in there so rapidly that it produces heat just like a light bulb. And that heat releases electrons inside that chamber, which in turn, because of the magnetic field, begin to spin around rapidly. And it's got little slots inside there that those little electrons get trapped up inside of that cause it to spin yet even faster, which produces the microwave that comes out the other side, going through a waveguide system into the microwave oven and bombarding the water molecules in your food, which produces the friction, which produces the heat that cooks your food.
Hey, wait a minute. You know, every once in a while I like to cut up and play and tell jokes and that kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, we're leaving seriousness. You said magnetron. Now, a microwave uses a magnetron to heat your food, but yet there is no flame. You're not burning anything.
That's right.
Just so why don't we call it a magicron? Because people that don't understand magnetron can't understand magic.
Alright, I want somebody to try an experiment.
Okay.
First off, I want you to get an old microwave magnetron, preferably the one with the white ceramic in there, because the other one has, I can't remember what that metal, the material that the pink ones are made out of. It's toxic material. You don't want to crush it up. But nonetheless, either one of them will work. Somehow, you need to take that magnetron and overpower it enough to burn the element out of the inside of the magnetron. You need to burn it in half. You need to make it to where when you put something on there to test the conductive the doggone element inside there, if it will no longer conduct electricity because the element is burned in half, then that is the perfect one for this experiment. So if you test it and it's good, you need to make it bad. If you find one that's bad that won't conduct all the way through there, you give you a little test light and a battery, and you can see whether or not that element's burnt in two. You want one that's burnt in two. Then take a 20,000 volt Beckett oil burner igniter, hook one side to the one leg of the oil burner igniter and the opposite side of the magnetron to the ground, and fire that puppy up and aim it at some water and heat your water using 12 volts of electricity. Because here's the thing, Raymond, and you've seen this with your own two eyes, and it's actually on video. We lit up a tungsten element light bulb with a 20,000 volt oil burner igniter off of one leg. You was able to run that high frequency through there, and it produced enough friction and heat inside that tungsten to literally light that light bulb up that was otherwise burnt up.
Yes. I saw that.
So all you need inside that magnetron is for that tungsten to get hot and release electrons into that magnetron. So you can do this even on a bad, just like we were lighting up bad fluorescent bulbs, you can light up a bad magnetron for a microwave. And if you can do that, you look on the back of them magnetrons, or not the magnetrons, but the Beckett oil burner igniters, and you'll see that they are in the milliamp range as to what energy they put out and use.
Yes.
So,
yes.
There you go, man.
Milliamps.
So you'll be able to take a look.
You said it 10,000 times. Light is heat, and heat is light.
Yeah, that's what science says.
Yeah. Yeah. And you showed me, and we made a video, and you put it on YouTube.
For those of you that don't believe me, go out there and get you the brightest LED flashlight or something with, like, you know, a million lumens or something like that. Turn that thing on for a while, and then put your hand on the front of it. What do you think's going to happen?
Yeah, I know what's going to happen.
Yeah. You heat the element up, it produces the light, and bingo, you got heat. It's as simple as that, man. Once you know basic science, then the argument's over. There ain't no reason to argue. It's just about whether or not we want to choose to engineer it. Beryllium. Marcus caught it. Beryllium. That's it. That's the pink one. Thanks, Marcus. You don't want to breathe the dust of that in.
I'm laughing because of all the ignorant, not stupid, ignorant people that say there's no such thing as free energy. I mean, you know, they're not ignorant. I mean, they're not stupid. They're just plain damned ignorant. They didn't pay attention in science class.
And they haven't been listening to the Mad Science Channel.
Exactly. I know we get angry like you do, okay? You get all upset and down in the mouth because somebody's cursing you out and saying you're stupid and you don't know what the hell you're talking about and this, that, and other. And the problem is, they have no idea what they're talking about.
That's right.
It's there, folks.
I think we have more.
Myself, Thomas, Larry, Muddy, we don't try to defy the laws of physics. They cannot be defied. They are real. They exist. You cannot create energy from nothing. Breathe nothing to nothing, you get nothing.
But you also know that you can choose to invoke or not invoke certain laws of physics. So if you don't rub two things together, you won't produce friction.
Exactly. That's my point. That was exactly what I was trying to say. Nothing bread to nothing breeds nothing. You cannot create energy from nothing.
See, here's the thing. You know, like I've been saying all the way through the show, thermal breakdown is the method by which everything fails. It gets too hot and it becomes soft and it fails. If you got two identical pieces of material, like bearings, like you got two steel bearings, everything in that bearing is made out of steel, all the same steel that takes the same exact melting temperature, that one bearing would last longer than a bearing that had something softer for the housing as opposed to maybe the bearing race or whatever. The weakest point of that will be the maximum amount of thermal breakdown that part can withstand before it fails. So if you know the melting temperature of steel, then you know where the failure point is in that steel before that steel will begin to fail. And if you can keep the temperature of those bearings down below the thermal breakdown point, those bearings will never fail.
All right, wait a minute. What is the strongest point of any chain?
The weakest link?
Exactly.
Well,
no chain, I don't care if it's 10 feet long or 1,000 feet long, it is no stronger than its weakest link.
There you go. And, you know, the answers are out there. The solutions are right there in front of every single eye that gets on this internet. You know, well, and there's libraries. There's each other.
Plug and play. That's all there is.
You got resources available in your own neighborhood. You got somebody who can weld. You don't know how to weld. They do. If you can get those people on board with a network in your own communities, you guys can go out there and you can troubleshoot things, and using all the technology you got, you can make your community by itself better.
Right.
And you can make yourself energy independent. You don't have to rely on the government to do things. See, I tried to take existing technology and find out what is the least amount of energy that I could use to run the most inefficient machines out there. It's nearly impossible. It's nearly impossible because those things are so inefficient that you can't run them. But if you think about it long enough, if it'll run off of 100 volts, it'll run off of 12 volts. You just got to re-engineer how that thing transfers that energy. You know, if you have to have a really super thick gauge to get it to run off 100 volts, but you run it to a thinner gauge to get it to run off a lesser volts, the magnetic field doesn't care. It's going to be the same magnetic field. Magnetic fields will interact with each other. You could literally design motors that would run off of small voltages like those little RC voltages. Our seed cars that got little tiny motors that run off of 3 volts or 1.5 volts a piece or whatever. Micro size. All right? Imagine scaling that up. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
If it can be scaled up, it can be scaled down, vice versa. That's what the whole concept of that pop-pop boat contest was back there. I couldn't believe we didn't get one single entry in that entire deal.
I entered that sucker.
Did you put a video up on it?
Yes, I did. I put 3 of them up.
Well, I need to go back and look at your video. We gave up because nobody was interested. But that one little contest right there with that boat, that thing, man, you could take that technology and build a solid-state boat motor that would rival the modern-day jet ski. That's a fact. There's so many ways that you can gather up heat, whether it be from the sun or friction or whatever. You choose your style of fuel, choose your style of energy, and you can boil water, literally, on demand. It's mind-blowing.
Is it ready to do a new contest? Count me for it. Yeah.
Well, we have to gather together, see who all wants to be involved. We can do it. I'd be more than happy to get it, because I want to see a full-sized pop-pop boat. I want to see it, because I know it can be done. Now, when people look at the small design, they say, well, you know, doing the math, it won't scale up like that. Well, that's why you got to change your engineering.
There you go.
You got to change the way that it's engineered. Using the same concept, it's a steam motor. Like my version of it that I showed was, basically a coil of copper tubing that's all coiled around, and the flame went through the center of the coil, which heated up the coil, which basically produced the temperature difference between the water and inside, and at certain temperatures, it would go to steam, and so now you've got one side be pushing out the water while the other side pulling in the water, and you got thrust forward. So, once it get to a certain pressure, you got both sides blowing out. It's the heat that's pushing you along. So you could build a full size version of it. You can use heat to pump water, a thermal siphon.
Actually, if you stop and think about what you just said, if you build a pop engine,
that's pretty really cool.
When it busted the water into steam, it creates a pressure, pushes out the back, pushing the boat forward. But now, all of a sudden, you've got check valves in this thing, okay?
Yeah.
So, now when you release that pressure and propel the boat forward, all of a sudden, you've got, it's not a vacuum, but it's a lesser pressure, so it needs to suck water in it, but you've got check valves that sucks the water in from the front, pulling the boat forward. And that water hit that hot chamber, bursting into steam, causing pressure, slamming the check valve forward, shut, and the one in reverse, open, causing the boat to go forward again.
Well, there you go, man.
I mean, think about it.
Essentially, the equivalence of the solid-state boat motor with no moving parts, except the check valve.
No moving parts. Now, you want to go fishing? When you cut your grass, dry it and use it as fuel.
There you go.
I mean, it sounds stupid, but think about it.
It don't sound stupid to me. You know how I think. I love creative thinking. I love backyard inventors. I love garage science guys. That's what mad science is all about. If you're tired of the science that the mainstream's dishing out, then jump on the bandwagon with the mad science, because mad science is here because it makes me mad to see that there are so many possibilities that are just being overlooked. And everybody who says it can't be done, like Henry Ford said, if you think it can or you think it can, you're right.
Right, exactly. I love that saying.
Well,
when he said that, he was a genius, he was brilliant, and very few people really and truly understood what he was talking about.
Well, I understand, and I agree.
Think you can, or you think you cannot, then you're right.
Well, the thing about it is, I know we can. And so, you know, I have faith in humanity that if humanity ever really seriously got serious in it, we could resolve all the issues on the planet. There are greedy people in this planet that don't want things resolved because they're making money off your misfortune and
exactly.
hard labor.
Thank you very much. There you go.
If you're tired of paying the electric, man, let's get together. Let's build the generating systems like we're talking about. Find somebody willing to try it before they deny it. See, I went out. I searched up some of the best auto mechanics that I've ever seen in my life. Some machinists that could literally build an engine from ground up. They get the raw materials. They put them on the lathe and the milling machines. And they can build an internal combustion engine using the knowledge that they have. Now, you step forward and ask one of those individuals to build a specific engine designed to run off a specific fuel such as water, they will look at you cross-eyed and tell you every reason why, under the sun, that you cannot do it because it violates the second law of thermodynamics. I'm sick and tired of hearing that. There is induction heating out there. There is air compressor technology. There is heat exchange technology. We know how water reacts to water. We know how to literally take water from its normal state as a liquid and turn it into a gas. We know how to take that gas and make it even smaller to vaporize it into a cloud. We know how to use the electrolysis process. We know how to use sound waves. We know how to use radio waves in order to break that down yet even further. And we literally know how, through diesel technology, to use compression ignition to ignite the substance. And in the process of separating hydrogen and oxygen, you get an electrical charge, and that's how a fuel cell works, a hydrogen fuel cell. By the separation and recombination of the water molecule inside there, you produce an electric charge that then in turn can be stored. So you don't even need a spark plug any longer. You don't need a doggone... what do they call it in diesel engine? A heat plug. Because you're now using induction heating to literally heat the metal of the cylinder itself up to operating temperature. 212 degrees, water will boil, and anything above that, it will begin to flash superheated steam. And water will expand 1,600 times its volume when it's flashed into steam. That steam pressure will slam down the piston, and as that piston's coming back up, making the compression, it will literally do exactly what Fukushima did when it built up too much pressure with steam. It produced a hydrogen explosion, which in turn would have pushed that piston right back down again. So, if I'm wrong, if I don't know what I'm talking about, Fukushima never happened. Ain't been no hydrogen explosion. The Hindenburg wasn't possible. None of it. Because if I'm wrong, then the science is wrong. If I'm wrong, then the laws of physics is wrong. Water is hydrogen and oxygen. Water can be used for so many purposes. Life-giving substance, you can drink it. It's got power. It's got potential for pressure. Depending on how you use that water, well, depending on what you're going to do with it. The same applies with heat. There's so much waste heat in this world, it's ridiculousness.
Yes, it is.
And heat is energy. You go out during the summertime, sweating, you got sweat rolling off your forehead, you're hot, you're miserable, you're all sticky, your body's hot, and so you go inside to cool off, you find the shade, you get inside the shade to cool down. That heat will fry you like bacon, you'll be like a dried up worm on the sidewalk. That's how powerful heat is. It'll sunburn you, it'll dehydrate you, it'll fry you out, because guess what? Your body is 3/4 covered in water. Amazing how that works.
more than 92%.
All right, well, you got a lot of water in your body.
Yes, you do. 92% of your body weight is water.
Well, And I'm telling y'all, if you want to be really, really fat, drink a heck of a lot of water. Oh, man. It's just crazy, though. We got the perfect fuel, the perfect energy source surrounding us. And we try to avoid heat during the summertime. We want to be cool during the summertime, so we use inefficient manners to cool down. In the wintertime, it's vice versa. We're trying to avoid the cold, so we need to generate some heat. Well, why are we all doing it backwards? Did you know you could take an air conditioner and turn that thing around backwards, and the heat transfer from the outside to the inside will blow heat in through the out your air conditioner? Hey, just
I'm glad you mentioned that. Really, because I've done it. I've done it here in my office. I turned my air conditioner around. I got one that's remote controlled, so therefore I don't have to go outside to set the heat.
Yep.
I just turned the air conditioner around in the wintertime.
And now you got a heater.
Control and set the temperature at what I want, and all of a sudden it's taking the cold air that's outside, extracting the heat from it, and putting it in my office.
Sure.
It works.
Now, here's another plus.
Wait a minute. It works.
Yeah. Here's another plus. You got one room and you want to make it into a freezer. You put the doggone cold air aside because it's already cold outside. You put it in this small closet, and you got your other end facing in the room you want to heat. And so one's going to get freezing cold because you're just pumping more cold air into it. You never want to turn the air conditioner on in your house during the wintertime. Why is that?
All right, wait a minute. So we don't confuse people out there. There is no such thing as cold air.
Well, nonetheless.
There is air that has less heat in it.
All right. The process is going to...
I don't want to confuse people out there. I don't want anybody jumping on your case that there's no such thing as cold air.
All right, regardless. No. Cold is cold. It's going to take the heat from one room and it's going to pump it into the other room. It's a heat transfer.
Exactly. And that when you take the heat out of the air, then the air that's remaining is cold.
Yep. And so
it has a lesser amount of heat in it than the other room.
So what I'm saying is, you can freeze your food and get your heat at the same time using the standard air conditioner.
Right. Exactly.
Because if you go outside during the summertime, put your face up next to the back of that doggone air conditioner, what you gonna get? You're gonna get hot.
Yep.
Plain and simple. It's taking all the heat out of your house, it's pushing it outside. And those systems that are set up to be a combination of a AC/heater system, they've learned this nifty trick called baffling, where they turn the air around inside the casing, and they'll send the cold out and the heat in.
All right, now wait a minute. In the summertime, you go out and put your face up to the back side of your window air conditioner, and it's going to be hot, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now, do you realize that under a vacuum, water will boil up at 55 degrees?
Well.
Now, it has no power. It has no power, except that it's exploding and agitating the water. That agitated water will move magnets on a floating device, and a moving magnet over a coil will produce electricity. So therefore, you take the heat on the backside of your air conditioner, produce electricity, and feed it back into your air conditioner.
That's right. Make a Stirling engine. All right. But anyway, my wife decided she didn't want to have to water her plants all the time. So what she did was put her plants underneath my daughter's air conditioner. And the temperature difference out there that made the condensation because of the temperature difference outside and the heat coming out of the back of that AC water serves plants for her.
Okay, I love it. That is using your head. I always thought Beverly was smart.
Of course she is. She's married to a genius.
She's brilliant. I love it.
She's married to a genius.
Yep. That was brilliant.
And so that saves her a lot of hassle. Letting physics and science and nature do what nature does.
Yep.
Look, you got the capability of literally producing your own water right out of thin air, folks. Literally.
Yes. That's exactly what she's doing.
Yep.
Right out
of thin air. And that's as simple as that. Once you know basic science, once you understand how nature functions, then you got it made. And if everybody out there wants to get this together, then jump over to Mad Science Channel. Look, we got to go. This Mad Science show's coming to a close today, which is a shame because I wouldn't mind doing this all day long every day. But, you know, I got other issues. I got to take care of myself. But if you like what you heard on this podcast, if you want to really support this radio network and TCT Radio Network and Haggy Shack Radio and all the other affiliated networks, which you can find links all over this website and others, look, you support them by going into their chat room and saying hi. They're not asking you for anything. They're not asking you for donations. They're only asking you for participation, just like here at Shaziz Radio. We're not begging you for money. We're not trying to get you to buy from advertisers. All we want is for your participation to bring your talents and your skills to the table and help us to build networks all over the planet of like-minded individuals who believe in mad science enough that they want to get something done. You want to fix your communities? We got people to tell you how you can do it. You want to solve the energy crisis, the so-called energy crisis of the world? We got people willing to show you how to do it. If you want to build clean, renewable, alternative energy devices, we got people that are willing to help do it. It's just that simple.
Wait a minute. Can I say something?
Yeah, I'm going to go around the table, let you guys have your work.
Wait a minute. People, put your daggone wooden stick and paper sign down and put your energy to real, genuine use. Quit screaming for other people to do your job for you. Put your paper sign down.
That's right. Put them down, folks.
You want to save the trees? Go plant one.
That's right.
I got a sneaking feeling that in the time it took you to make that sign, let alone the time it took you to walk around waving your sign, if you went out and planted a tree, you could plant it 4 or 5 of them.
Yeah.
You want to save the trees.
And point of fact,
you're going to wave your sign.
Point of fact is this. Look.
You could have made that sign. You could have planted 5.
Yeah. Listen, folks. Point of fact is this. You factor in all the years and all the protests of all the different things in this world, and you tell me that the world is any better for all the protests and violence that has occurred, including the wars and all that, and rumors of wars and plagues and famines and pestilence. You tell me that today's day is better than it was back then, and I will tell you that you haven't been paying attention. You want to resolve these issues? The best way to resolve these issues is for the people to rise up and use what they've been given, the gifts of their brain, their knowledge, their power of the spoken word, and all that kind of stuff. You get those pieces of the puzzle together, and the rest will fall in place. While you're out there on your social media networks, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Joe's website or whatever, pass these podcast links around. Go visit these people in all these chat rooms. Say hi to them. There's wonderful people at TCT Radio. There's wonderful people at Haggy Shack Radio. There's wonderful people at all these different networks out there. Go visit them. Say hi. Tell them Shaziz sent you. And, you know, that's how you support us. We don't need your financial donations. We need your brains. We need your participation to make this thing work. That's what it's all about. It's all of us coming together, doing what needs to be done, and making this world right. It's as simple as that. You've been listening to Mad Science. You guys got anything left before we run up out of here?
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead.
Life gives you lemons, make lemonade.
Yeah, and battery acid out of the same lemonade.
Right. Think about that. Hey, if life gives you crap, make fertilizer.
Yep, and methane from the fuel.
Oh man, I love that, Shaziz.
Alright, what about you, Jermaine?
If the life's gonna give you crap, then you make methane gas.
And use it for fuel.
And then what's left over, don't throw it away, put it on the garden, because it is fertilizer. Oh man, you just expanded it.
Jermaine, what about you, brother? You got any last words? He went to sleep on us. Got his mic muted. Thomas, are you asleep?
Yeah, he is.
All right, folks. Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Jermaine. Thanks, Raymond. Thanks, Thomas. Thanks, everybody in the chat room. Steve Gibbons, Patty Walker Turtle, Marcus, and everybody who participated today. The participation is what makes this thing work. And so, with that said, if you want to save the world, we do too. Join us. Pass these podcasts around. Rebroadcast them to all your heart's extent. Whatever you believe in on this, if you want to use it, it's yours. This website's yours. The microphone's yours. Come join us. Jump on Skype. Become one of the Knights of the Round Table or one of the Mad Science. So speaking of the Knights of the Round Table, tomorrow we're going out to my father-in-law's for Father's Day, so I'm going to have to try to get somebody to do the Knights of the Round Table. Sad face. Emoji, I guess. All right, folks. That's the end of the Mad Science Show. Peace and love. Stay tuned. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.